Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With
about half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike. The CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medin. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th man, John Inch. Yes, another terrible week to have to concern ourselves with this goddamn CBA. I'm getting a headache. I'm getting a headache, and I'm going to get a bigger headache because we're going to even go deeper in it today. And it's going to go like this. This is the way it's going to play out. And guys, we can agree. This is a democratic situation here, and there is no other way to describe this other than democratic. Now, we'll find out what everybody wants to talk about, then we'll start talking about the CBA. The way I see us doing this. Now, look, I'm going to look at the CFL webpage, and first of all, let's get an update from one of the guys, and I think I see Bill Howe there again. Bill, you're with us again, right?
Hello?
I guess that's a no.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, Mike. Yes, sir.
All the mics are up. Okay. So, maybe that's... Oh, you know what? My bad. That's not who I thought it was. It is actually Bruce John Inch that I'm referring to.
Hey.
There we go. First of all, before we get into the hammer and tong business... Please, Bruce, let's talk a little bit about what happened this past weekend. We talk about how wonderful the players are, and let's set aside all this difference we have about laundry and stuff, and talk about the players and about the event that took place that was put together by the Cat's Claw. I wore my Argonaut hoodie, and I survived. The torches didn't catch me. And I want to say truthfully, honestly, under the conditions and knowing Hamilton fans the way they were very hospitable to me even when I was wearing my Argo thing. Of course, somebody honking a horn? There we
what
go.
Was that?
I got rid of it. I don't know. I don't know. Whatever it was, obviously, it might have been... I think Mike Townsend's in the room again. And basically that might have been somebody honking at him or something because he was paying too much attention. So I just turned off his mic. I hope he doesn't get angry with me. So tell us, my friend, what it's all about, the Cat's Claw. Tell us as best you can why it exists and how much fun it was. I really had a good time. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, well, thanks for coming out, man. And, you know, even with your Argos hoodie, you were the talk of the town that night.
I don't think so, but okay.
You got cojones, buddy, and I like that. But I think it went fabulous. This was actually the first Cat's Claws event that I've been to. I'm actually going to join the Cat's Claws fan club. Seems like a great organization. And I learned so much that night. Like I never knew that Killer Rose, which is the president of the club, when the Tie Cats were in very tough times before Bob Young bought them, she and a group of people went door to door trying to get people to buy tickets to come out and see the game. So she's actually why the Hamilton Tie Cats are in Hamilton, besides Bob Young. This was, like I said, before Bob Young came into the picture and bought the team. But, you know, it's because of people like that and because of the fan base, I guess, in Hamilton that kept this team alive. And that was really touching, and it was also really nice to see that they honored her by that wonderful jersey, framed jersey they gave her. But besides that, the food was great. It was nice to see the inductees get their Walk of Fame. if you've ever been to Ivor Wynn Stadium, well, you can't go anymore, but in the past tense, and you take a look up on the wall on the outside of the building, they have all the different plaques of the Wall of Fame.
The Wall of Fame, yep.
That's right. And I never really knew what that was about until I went there the other night. And I,
well, you get a deeper understanding.
Even as a die-code, yep. die-hard Cat fan, I learn more and more about this team every day.
I want to explain why I was laughing. It had nothing to do with anything you were saying other than the fact that you talked about the food being good. And I thought it was really good, too. And when they passed the pasta plate around, which we were supposed to share, Phyllis goes, that's a little too much for me.
I thought the same thing, though, man, when they handed me mine. But then, yeah, because, you know, that's just, yeah, that was cute.
That was funny. And, like, you know, it wasn't, like, I don't think, to be honest, but we knew, you know, I've already figured out, you know, it wasn't that much to go around. Like, we knew we were going to get another bowl. But I just thought that was funny that Phyllis at least admitted that might have been a little too much for her. You know, it's the fans and the people, you know, while we talk about, you know, owners and players and such things, you know, what we keep forgetting, and tonight I'd like to talk about that as well. You know, we can talk about whatever the guys want to talk about, and you know, you want to set fire to the other guy's ideas, that's fine. I'm okay with that. But one thing we all got to remember, guys, and let's put this in perspective, okay? As much as the owners give away in money, you know, if they don't want to own the team, there's a very simple solution. They don't. And if the team, if the league folds, so be it. You know, everybody is a, you know, a willing participant. Everybody. The players, the owners, the fans, and the fan groups. And as willing participants, I want to put this across, and I want to thank Bruce for inviting me because he helped me to get something in perspective, okay? There are a lot of people who give a lot of time and get nothing for it, money-wise, where maybe in other leagues these people would have jobs. You know, when I heard, I almost, and okay, you guys are going to think I'm kidding or I'm exaggerating or whatever, but I almost felt like crying when I heard them tell the story about the team in deep trouble and a group of fans, including the mayor, went door to door to people's homes to ask them to buy Tie Cat tickets. Now,
absolutely.
As much as Bob Young has given millions and millions and millions, and here's, you know, there's one thing that can't be replaced in our lives, folks, and let's remember this. You know, the joke is, I'll never get that 10 minutes back. You know, that's the joke. But in reality, people give up a lot of their free time for their CFL teams. This goes beyond the Hamilton Tiger Cats. This goes beyond the Toronto Argonauts. It goes beyond every CFL team. This is about a league that fans love dearly. It's a league that people shed tears, blood and sweat, and really do care about their team. And you know what? That's the reason I believe that the players are so amicable and so available and so willing to share their time with the fans, because these guys aren't blind. We talk about, we've heard, Bruce, you know, we've heard about people talking about players are only on teams for 5 years. Yeah, that's true. You know, the average existence of a player on a team, you know, in the league is about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
But there are a lot of them that survive a lot longer than that, right, Bruce?
There were, but a far and few between. I think the longest serving Tie Cat in what's the word I'm looking for?
In history?
But not in history, but just in previous history, I guess, is Merwin Hage. Like, he did all 10 years here. Right. And but like you said, there's
so
not too many people that last with one team, you know, with exceptions. But there's always exceptions, isn't there?
But But the point is, the players right away understand, you know, when you go to a team's webpage, right, Bruce? When you, and I'm talking to you about this because you, more than anybody around here, has the availability, the willingness, and the time to spend at the practice, wherever the practices are for the Ticats, to go there.
Right,
another
I'm
thing
very
that,
fortunate that way.
Yeah, and the CFL teams, all of them, well, your team with Austin, he takes things a little too seriously. But for the most part, fans are invited to the practices. And when I say invited, I just got an invitation from the Argos, as usual, as a season ticket holder, I guess. They sent me an invitation. You're welcome to the practices. Here are the times. You can check them out and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know that you get that with any other league. So I guess what I'm trying to say and what I'm asking you is, it feels good to be a CFL fan, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it feels
right.
And the reason why it feels good is because the players recognize you. You know, you're not just one, you're not just somebody in the crowd. You know, when, like, I don't know about, like, I'm over exuberant, whatever, with my team. But when I go to games even, you know, I got players pointing at me and asking, you know, and they know me. And you can't tell me that you can do that in an NHL or NBA or the NFL or any other major organization.
At least to the same degree. At the very least, to the same degree.
That's right. Like, you know, the Ticats, they've opened up every practice to the fans unless it's held indoors. And the reason why Austin doesn't and same with every coach. Cortez didn't do it. Belafu didn't do it before that. It's because the indoor where they practice is too small for the fans to come. So they only allow a select amount of media. The only practice that I've ever known to be canceled or closed to the public since I've been a season ticket holder has been the final practice when we were playing Toronto.
The Eastern
semifinal.
Final.
Right?
Yeah, the Eastern
because
final.
They went out to Saskatchewan to practice the week of the Great Cup.
That's
the only
right.
practice that was canceled was the very last one. The first two were open that week, but the last one was closed. And that was to everybody, media and everything. Now, sometimes you have to do that, man, especially when it comes to the big game, because you always get somebody in there that's not a crook, but that's a spy. How's that? Because Winnipeg threw a spy
well,
in a few years ago.
Let's just say an undesirable.
An undesirable, that's right. But for the most part, you know, well, in any part, I think this is the best league in the world, whether it's hockey, football, soccer. You know, that's another thing. Everybody says soccer is so big in Canada. Then why doesn't Canada have a team in a national, in a whatever this cup coming up? I found that to be a joke. You go into these dollar stores, you see every team but Canada.
Because we suck.
Well, we might
we
not
suck,
the
Argos
aren't
the only ones.
But everybody
that sucks.
Says
but
soccer is so big in Canada, but I don't see
you
it.
You know what, Bruce? Who cares about those other sports? We're CFL fans. And, yes,
absolutely.
I love the game of hockey. But right now, right here at this time, they don't exist. What
absolutely.
Exists for me is the CFL. And for today, at least for the start, guys, I'd like to ask you guys this, okay? What draws you into the CFL? You heard Bruce and I talk about the fans being so dedicated. You heard us talk about the players being, you know, accessible, friendly, and willing to rub elbows with the fans. The players do. You know, we've got owners that literally donate money to the league in the highest numbers. We don't know exactly how much. We've heard how much we think it is, but everybody. The league is a league that, for whatever reason, attracts enough people that it exists. And I just wanted to ask you guys one at a time, what brought you into the CFL, and what do you see as the positive? And please, at this point at least anyway, let's not talk about the negative like the CBA and that kind of stuff. Let's talk about the positive things about the CFL. And I'll start with the next guy that comes to mind as a diehard. There's a tie for next, and I'll start with Christopher Jones because I'm sure he's dying to say something positive about the CFL.
Is this me? Am I up?
Yep, I think you're Christopher.
Yeah, no, I just didn't know whether my mic was on here because my wife was
using
my phone.
Oh, they're all on.
Phone, no, so.
They're all on. I turned them on once.
No. But I can I muted at this end when I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing.
Oh, okay.
Like when I go
Fair
take
enough.
A leak or something.
That's okay. We've all heard it before.
What brought me to this league was that as a young boy, it was affordable. I could go without my parents. I could get into the stadium. I had access to it, and I got to see it. The fact that we got to go and talk to the players, that they were approachable, that everything just endeared me to this sport, to this league. It was wonderful. It was something to aspire to. As I got bigger and older and wiser, I realized that these guys play for the love of the game and not for the paycheck. And that brought a lot home to me in that aspect, where these guys, I was making more money than three quarters of these football players. And to me, for them to go out there and do that for that paycheck, it was phenomenal for me. I just thought that they were just the absolute greatest people on the face of this planet.
And now talk about the game itself. I get the paycheck. I get how dedicated the players are to playing for literally almost nothing. I shouldn't say that. But regardless, how about the game itself? What about the game that brought you back?
Well,
aside from the fact that it was affordable specifically.
Well, it's fast-paced. It's moving. It's exciting. It's not boring game. The NFL, I've tried to watch a couple of games. I fall asleep. I watch hockey. I fall asleep. Football keeps me excited. Baseball's worse than all of them. And I can't watch soccer. It's like watching a ping pong game.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so, it's the only sport that I can honestly watch, stay awake, and enjoy. And the people that are around me, the fans that are with me, are like-minded. They're all good people.
And you like the people that are in the stadium with you as well?
Of course.
Cool. No, cool. There's no judgment on my part.
There's no wrong answer.
No, there isn't, and I'm just trying to look at the positive that the CFL is, because in my mind, since I've been, I almost feel like a born again. Like I'm a born again CFL fan. I took a vacation for a while because life got in the way.
So
I consider myself a born again. I never missed Grey Cup games. I never missed the majority of football games during the season. I've always enjoyed watching it. So I relate to what you're saying, and you're 100% right. Manasseh, as an outsider, as a person outside of the North 49th, which is Canada, I guess, as an American growing up in Minnesota, with ties, of course, to Winnipeg familiar-wise, what attracts you to the game, and what do you find so wonderful that you just can't resist following it, especially being where you are?
Yeah, no, I grew up a diehard Vikings fan, and so was my whole family. And just basically around 2009, 2010, I just got disenchanted with the team. I was just really upset with the way things were going, and I decided, let me check out some other leagues. And I happened to start watching the UFL and, stuff, and that was just it was horrible. So just by chance, I was on my computer. I happened to come across the Canadian Football League, and this was in 2010, and right when the Grey Cup was going on. And so I just tuned in to see, check it out. I thought it was going to be just like the UFL, and I was shocked to see, 60-some thousand plus at Edmonton for the Grey Cup. And then when I watched the game itself, I was blown away by the style of play. Everything about it was everything an NFL fan loves about the NFL, except much more exciting. And then when I started doing the research and looked at the history, I was blown away. And I fell in love with it basically right then and there. And since then, I've been a huge fan of the league. And I don't know, man. To me, it's the best sports league, hands down. And I agree with Chris. It's the most fun sports to watch compared to everything else.
And that's because of the speed. The guys aren't – there are big guys in the league. But it's a smaller player league, which I guess affords itself to more of the pinball kind of, and I don't mean that as a reference to Pinball Clemens, but the players do bounce off players. There are heavy hits, but there's a lot of contact and a lot of evasion that doesn't happen in other football leagues. Would you agree with that? And is that part of the attraction?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, what I really got into was the history of the league is what got me, the history of the rivalries. Even like the little idiosyncrasies that you have to be like a real fan to notice. Like for me, it was the whole struggle of Anthony Cavillo and Montreal always losing in the Grey Cup, and to see them finally get over the hump. And I just love, like, the storylines within the league itself, like, drew me, too. And for me, I don't know, when I looked at it, I just say, when you take the whole package, and, like, to Chris's point, you see these guys are not getting paid, you know, millions. These are just regular guys like you and I, just out there for the love of the game. And, man, I don't know. I loved it. First sight, I fell in love with the game, and I've been hooked since.
You know, Manasseh, another thing that I'm going to ask you because of the position you're in. As a newbie to the CFL, I think also, and you help me understand this, and anyone in the room can also take their turn when they're up. Also, the fact that there are so few teams makes it easier, you know, that ramp-up time to understand or get used to the league and get to know it is much easier because it's really the only reputable league, and I consider it a reputable league, that has so few teams. That means that you can really get to know all the teams and understand their, you know, their specific positives and negatives a lot easier than in a 28-team league.
Yeah, very true. Like, I've got kind of an obsessive compulsive disorder where when it comes
no.
to like memorizing information, but for me, like, I knew the NFL like the back of my hand. Like, I knew every team, their roster, the styles of play. So when I got into the CFL and I only had 8 teams to work with, I just absorbed it. And I know the CFL, like, thoroughly. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, I know facts about teams from the 50s and 40s. But anyway, that's good. But the one thing that really got me, too, was going to Winnipeg and just seeing how much the city loved the team. And for me, people in Winnipeg, they love the team more than people down here love the Vikings. I don't know if people really know that. Like, the passion that you see, especially in the prairies, is so unique. Like, I've only seen a few
that's
cities in America that
passion.
Love this sports team.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Manasseh, that's the small-town passion. Like, you know, when people – you're 100% right. And you know, when people talk about fans in Canada of the CFL, I believe that the biggest problem for places like Toronto is they don't have that small-town mentality. And I hate to say this, and I don't know if there's any Montreal fans listening, they're going to hate what I'm saying too. And the same is true for Montreal. You know, maybe
Vancouver.
Not – and okay, I didn't want to say that because I felt
Vancouver,
like I was insulting you. But
not
know,
at all. I
it
agree.
Really is. It is a real heartland game, you know. And the people that love it, that keep it alive, are. I'm not saying Argo fans like me can't keep it alive. I'm not saying Montreal fans like Serge can't keep it alive. I'm not saying guys like Christopher can't keep BC alive. But really, it is a small town game when you think about it. You know, you're 100% right. You know, you're making me think. By the way, Manasseh. And I think that's the attraction of the CFL for a lot of people, that it isn't big city. And I don't mean it in a – I do mean – you know what? I do mean it in a negative way. There's something about when you say big city that's a turnoff. And the CFL doesn't have the big city swagger, you know. They have the small town pride, you know, and that's, I guess, a direct reference to Ryder fans. You got something else you want to add, Manasseh, before I move on to the next guy?
Yeah, just one last point. I feel like it's got like a throwback feel to it, like back in the simpler times when sports wasn't all corporate and all this nonsense. It's got more of like a community feel. Like, the guys are regular guys just out there playing. The fans are connected. The players interact with the fans. Like,
ownership.
It's something. Yeah, it's got that beautiful sort of, you know, timeless classic feel to it that I think the rest of sports has lost. And, you know, with that whole corporate, you know, take over.
Big city attitude. I hate to say
exactly.
It, but it is the big city attitude. It's big time. You know, there's something to be said for small time. You know, again, that might sound like a negative, but honestly, it isn't a negative. I mean it in a very positive way. I guess it's only just that we go to one of the guys in here that is small time. He's home. His home is small time, and his team is small time. But they make a lot of money, and they're very, you know, big organization. And, of course, Kelly, what do you think of what's been said so far? And how about sharing with us your attraction to the game and what triggered your loyalty, which there is no doubt about, with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
Definitely. I said it today, actually, on Facebook in the CFL Is group. Whether you like it or not, if you're born to Saskatchewan parents or in this fair province itself, you're kind of born onto an oath where, you know, you promote the green and white relentlessly in an effort to ensure the well-being of the province itself. Now,
The way I got into football was my dad took me to a game when I was 5 years old in the Safeway section. Now, the Safeway seats were, I believe, $5 at the time for a child and $10 for an adult. That was actually for the season ticket. It was $5 and $10 for a season ticket. This is in 1982. So that was extremely accessible, if you know what I'm saying. Like, my dad just immediately snapped those up for us. And then I joined a touch football league when I was 5. And the teams were named after Roger Aldag, Albright, Eddie Lowe had a team. And they were all the guest coaches of these teams in the Regina Minor Touch Football Association. Ray Elgard had a team, and I was actually on Ray's team as a kid. And I got to, learn from one of the best ever. You take a drive toward Calgary on the number one highway, toward Saskatoon, on the number 11 highway in Saskatchewan, and there's a sign way out past Lumsden that says Ray Elgard has received as many yards as there are from here to Midtown Plaza in Regina. we like the legends here, and that's kind of what Manasseh was getting at, and Christopher touched on it too, is, there is a historical value to the building that we're about to lose. It's hitting home for a lot of people right now because there's going to be a transition over to Mosaic 2.0, but like everybody said too and agreed upon, it's very grassroots, and these are the types of leagues that I've always liked. I like other leagues kind of like this league as well, and I cheer for teams that I believe kind of mirror my CFL franchise, being the Vikings and the Cleveland Browns and the Boise State Broncos. And there's another point was when I was 7 years old, swimming over at a friend's house as a part of a YMCA program that they kind of third-partied out to neighborhood swimming pools that were big enough. And Mike Lozecki was the lifeguard. Now, God rest his soul, Mike passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a punter with the Riders at the time, and basically many, many, many encounters and stories, and just being that close to a Rider was pretty cool growing up. Also, went to school with Trevor Samples, the son of legendary Rider safety Mike Samples, also Tiger Cat. Yeah, that's my story. It's just all about close connections and feeling it. I love the league.
It's not hard to feel it, is it?
Nope. Not at all.
What do you think of you don't take it as an insult when I refer to the CFL as a small town league?
Not at all. No, it is. I think there's better words that we could use.
Yeah, I'm sure there are better words, but...
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and you're right. It is, it's got that small town feel, and, like I said on another show, in Saskatchewan, the center of the community is the curling rink. And,
wow.
Similar atmosphere, believe it or not, Manasseh, it's kind of, obviously it to the nth degree, but walking into Mosaic on a game day is almost like walking into the curling rink on a lazy Saturday afternoon. Like, not even kidding. It's a really awesome thing. Like, just the culture and how different it is here. Like, I really think Frank and you would be shocked at a game and pleasantly surprised, I would think and hope. But anyway, that's a different topic.
Well, I spent some time doing play-by-play of curling matches, and So I got to know, and that's a sport that, again, is small town. And it's very successful small town, even here in the greater Metro Toronto area. But it really still has its Saskatchewanish like you know, gravitas that is in northern Ontario, you know, eastern Ontario, western Ontario, but, you know, it's you're right. There's a certain feeling. I think it's the smell of the beer, you know, and the fries. And, you know what I'm saying, right? Because
the smell of the,
like,
nachos.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, it's what people have to do. Like when Kelly says that the curling rink is the center of the community, it really is. And it isn't sad to say, it's great to say that everybody has one place to go where they can, you know, everybody knows everybody. That's how you get to know everybody in town. And it goes right up to 35,000 plus as well. That attitude still permeates, you know, those communities as well. And it's a great feeling. And the CFL really, I think, gives us a great opportunity to, you know, appreciate a game to a degree that we can't in other sports. And I really hang off this business of there only being nine teams. It's unique. Anybody who's a sports fan, I defy you to find a league that has only that many teams and plays at the level that they play. Because soon as you get a league that has a game that plays at this level, the first thing they want to do is expand. I almost sometimes am glad that the CFL hasn't expanded to 20 teams. I'm not sure that I would like it as much. Now, that may, you know, that's just if and or but, you know, that isn't woulda, coulda, shoulda. It's just the way I feel. Okay, now, anybody want to, well, wait, hang on. I still got to do an old friend here. I don't know. I was worried that he was in a truck accident because I hadn't heard from him in so long. Let's hear the sultry voice of Mike Townsend.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey,
welcome back, buddy.
Bro.
You had me worried, man.
Oh, man, I got home. I haven't been home in like 2 months, man. So when I got home, I kind of was incognito, you know. Chilling with Baby Sid and chilling with Ev, you know, just giving my missus and my lady some home time, you know.
Well, now that you have time to share with us, how would you like to jump in on the subject of what brought you into the CFL and what attracts you and you know, turns your crank when it comes to the CFL? How you got in and why you love it so
much? Like I said before, a long time ago when we had this conversation, man, I can remember watching the CFL game, man, as a young age of 2 or 3 years old. You know, Friday nights when the Argos came on CBC, man, you know, that was Detroit's home team in the CFL. I mean, Friday nights, the CFL nights, man. Everybody tuning in, Channel 9, watching the games and waking up the next morning, talking about them. You know, as a teenager, I really got into it, man, watching Ricky Foggy, Matt Dunnigan, Kent Austin, all them guys, man, that you see on the TV, man. I don't watch them, you know what I'm saying? Watching Harry Burris play for Saskatchewan. You know, G-Roy Salmon being in Winnipeg. I mean, I loved it all, man. Rocket Ishmael making an announcement on the NFL draft that he's going to Toronto. I mean, man, fast pace. I mean, there's no other league like it, you know. And, you know, I'm not taking nothing against the NFL, but, I mean, CFL is more fast pace, and the NFL has watered down dramatically. You know what I'm saying? It makes the fans don't like it, man. So, you know, Toronto was Detroit's home team. I mean, Toronto has more fans in Detroit than Hamilton does.
I hear you. And you know, for an American kid growing up, you know, the NFL is the big deal. I get that. But, you know, it isn't like, you know, these players are unknown to you guys because in the U.S. you have college and you follow those college teams. And a lot of the guys that you mentioned were big deals in college. So when they went up to the CFL, it wasn't like you were following somebody you knew nothing about.
Right, right. You know, watching Rocky Ishmael go, and then a couple other players that played in the NFL, they ended up going to the CFL, like Akili Smith played in the CFL. Andre Ware had him a couple of years when he played there. I mean, there's a lot of guys, man, that I followed that played in the CFL. And actually, that was the biggest thing for me when the CFL was expanding, that they were really hard-pressed about putting a team in Detroit, but the owner of the Shreveport Pirates tried to boycott it, and then that right there ended the deal. So, you know, that was really heartbreaking for guys like me, man, and for the city of Detroit, because we were looking for that team to come.
Exactly. All right, listen, we've got Christopher Jones, who today, unfortunately, can't be here the whole show, so he has a little bit of time left. And I'm very interested in what happened with the BC huddle-up, or ticket huddle-up. And Christopher was just thrilled with being there, had his picture taken with a bit of laundry, I mean players, and had a great time there.
Laundry.
Well said.
Laundry.
How many
actually,
hangers?
Actually, you know, it was a wonderful event. Unfortunately, because this year I don't have season tickets, I didn't get to the early part of the huddle up. I did get into the public open house one afterwards, which was quite spectacular. BC Place Stadium, the entire field was opened up to the kids. There was bounce castles. There was all sorts of other toys and games and everything else to play with. There was a bunch of lineups for booths or tables that were set up for autographs for the players. Two players were sat at a table, and then there was a big, long lineup. The biggest, longest lineup for any player to get the autograph signed was who? Travis Lule?
Khalif Mitchell.
Khalif Mitchell. It was huge. Okay?
Wow.
And the man, he is such a special individual. I mean, I've harped about him for years. It was the players all rotate, right? They went somewhere else, or two came out of the locker room and traded those two, and the other two left up. Khalif got up from the table, took a step 10 feet to the right, and continued signing autographs for the next hour and a half.
Just standing up.
Standing beside the table to make sure that everybody got what they came for. And he was getting hugs from little old ladies. He was getting... People were crying on his shoulder, welcoming him back. It was a very, very touching moment. It was spectacular. I mean,
yeah,
the guy looks at me and he just gives me a big hug and he says, "Bud, what you're doing is great." And I just went, "Whoa, you know who I am?" And I thought that was really kind of special because he absolutely knew what I was doing with the Lions Den, and he's only been in for a couple of weeks. I'm standing at center completely by myself out of nowhere. I get blindsided by Marco Iannuzzi, who comes over and gives me a big hug, and he says, "You are doing a spectacular job on Facebook for the BC Lions. Thank you, bro." And I went,
"That is really nice.
This is, like, cool. This is really cool." So I didn't stand in these lineups to go talk to these players. I don't collect autographs. It's not part of me. So I went kind of mingled around and everything else, and I got to see the important people on the team, in my opinion, the important people. I got to talk to Wally Buono for, you know, almost 5 minutes. I talked to Coach Benavides for another 5 minutes. I sat down with David Braley for almost 40 minutes talking with him because nobody else was around. David was sitting at the table having a hot dog. I sat down with him, and we talked. And we talked about all sorts of things in the CFL, all the good things in the CFL. Nothing bad. We never brought up the CBA. We never talked about anything to do with that at all. I wanted to keep everything positive and upbeat with him. It was just a wonderful man. He's just very heartwarming to be with. He's very inspirational. Loves sitting with billionaires. Please, rub off.
Well,
right?
I had a chance to talk to him for a few minutes, too, here in Toronto. And, you know, he's an elderly statesman. When it comes to the way he, you know, he just draws respect when you talk to him. He's candid. He's not afraid to tell you.
He did not say a bad word about a single soul.
There you go. But he's very candid.
Okay, so,
you know, he's not afraid to go out on a limb and say something. When I talk to him, I hope this isn't a competition. When I talk to him, my biggest interest was a stadium for the Argos, and I said, you know, I didn't have, I didn't have 40 minutes. I had about 5 or 10, and I wanted to hit a few of the salient points in my mind, and the first and most important thing was, are we going to get a stadium? He says, "Oh, yeah, we're going to get a stadium." Just like that.
Yeah.
Just
cool.
Like that.
Yeah, of course.
There's no long story. There's no long story. There's no adjectives. It's just, yep, we're getting a stadium. Okay.
Yep.
Sounds good. You going to sell the team?
We're going to have.
Actually, I promised I wouldn't mention some stuff that I mentioned on the show. So, having said all that, you know, he's a great man, and you know, we're talking positives right now at this point, and like I said, we're very fortunate to have people step up and help keep this league going. Some have given more than others. We're not really sure how much everybody's given, but, you know, we hear that the numbers are staggering, to say the least, if true. And I hate to qualify it with that. This isn't a comment on people like Braley, but there are secondary people who may be, you know, giving numbers that aren't realistic. But, you know, they're making a point. Great, you made a point. Thank you for making that point. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, though, people aren't getting rich owning CFL teams unless you're in Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, or maybe even BC. But outside of that, well, Edmonton, I'm hearing, is doing okay. So, you know, we're on a good spot.
They weren't doing all that well back in 2010.
Yeah, back then. They've worked things out. And I guess the positive thing, all I'm trying to say from a positive sense, is that, you know, it isn't all doom and gloom, Christopher. You know, you and I spend a lot of time bantering on Facebook, and it almost sounds like it's hammer and tong, doom and gloom. No, we just
absolutely
have our
not,
opinions.
No.
We have our opinions, and we both feel the same way about the league. But, yeah, we come at it from different directions. But when push comes to shove, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to help the league, just like you are. We're just going to do it in our own way, and that's true for everybody else in here. Anything else happen at the event?
Well, the cool thing was that there was a lot of fans. Actually, the first thing that happened was they were inundated. They had no idea that the amount of people were going to show up that did. The lineup, the beginning lineup, was around BC Place. It was almost circumferred the whole entire building. It was huge.
Beautiful.
They expected 1,500 people. I think 5,000 showed up. So it was huge. It was a huge undertaking for this. This is where a lot of the season ticket holders were giving out their season tickets. They got to pick them up in a little box, and it was really cool. And then people got them autographed and all sorts of things. So there was a lot of different fans there. And the cool thing was that, again, because of this Facebook group that we're in and we're doing this, and I don't want to make it look like notoriety, people were coming up to me and going, yeah, buddy, hey, how you doing? And it was such a warm feeling for me that, you know, us in this group right now that's on this radio program in CFL is, in the Lions Den, in whatever group that you're in part of, we're making a difference to people. They appreciate what we're doing.
And I happen to,
me,
I happen to believe...
To me, that was a huge thing that was massive. It was massive for me because I really did. I honestly, I'm doing this selfishly. I really enjoy it. It's part of my life. I'm having a hoot with it. But now I realize that we're doing it for – it's a much greater, bigger thing than any of us.
Well,
the CFL is going to give us notoriety sooner or later anyway. I feel that, especially with the CFL is and the other supporting groups around, the CFL is going to notice this.
I hope they do, and that's great. When I first started – On this road that is Blog Talk Radio, around the same time CFL was getting on its feet, I think we all agree on one thing, is that we love the game so much we want to brag about it. We want to talk about it. We want to promote it. And the biggest reason is, I've said this before and I'll say it again and I'll say it forever, I didn't feel there was enough attention being paid to the CFL. And I didn't think there was enough attention being paid to the CFL on a national level. Yeah, I get, you know, Kelly and the Saskatchewan groups. I get, you know, everybody else who has, you know, Bruce John Inch with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. As an Argo fan, I found that we were really sadly lacking people like John Granger. You know, when I met John Granger, he changed my attitude about the CFL. I felt like I needed to be more involved because... in Toronto, it's a real fight to get excited here and to get excitement going. I don't know whether it's because we were dwarfed by big city, you know, and again, I'm using that term. We're dwarfed by,
Frank,
you know, all the big city teams and stuff. It's a struggle. And I wanted
Frank,
to do
gotta
something
head
about
out.
It. Okay.
Sorry to bother you guys, but
oh,
I got
to
head out. You have a wonderful day. Take care, guys. We'll talk to you Friday. Cheers.
Yep. Okay, he's got some wedding stuff to take care of. He's got some wedding stuff to take care of. His daughter's getting married and yada, yada, yada. So he had to go. So, I mean, you know, Manasseh, do you understand where I'm coming from? You know, I know you've criticized, and you've been sometimes, and I'm going to say it straight, you've been unfair to Toronto, but do you understand how difficult it is to prop a team in a big city that is so spoiled and jaded with everything being big city that when they see a small town game, they almost think as a rule and as a whole that it's beneath them. Like the NFL, we're the NFL. That's what we are. We're Toronto. We are NFL. And, you know, that's, you know, my, you know, that's my biggest problem and why I got involved in this. And I was fortunate enough to run into you guys last year, a little over a year ago. And I'm pleased that we got together because we wouldn't be together if it wasn't for that move. And you guys have helped me to accomplish, for the most part, I haven't accomplished everything I want to accomplish, but for the most part, without you guys, we wouldn't have been this far. And together, we've promoted the idea that the CFL's the best football in the world. And I love talking about it, and I just thought there wasn't enough talk about it here in Toronto, so I started with an Argo show, which I don't know whether I'm going to bring back an Argo show or whatever. Whatever the CFL needs in this town to you know, even if it's only 100 people that buy season tickets because they think they agree with us or they heard about us and they checked stuff out and they go, oh, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot. Even if they don't listen to the program, but they know about it and they know that these people are nuts about the CFL. If we can do that, that's all I've tried to do, and that's all I wanted to do. Who wants to jump in next to pick that up where I've just left off? No one?
I've really got
somebody.
Yeah, I've got nothing for that.
Okay.
I guess
you said it all, Frank.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question, though, to Frank and to Bruce. Did last year's East Final, did it have any effect as far as, you know, people maybe, because I think you guys said a lot of people tuned in and that haven't probably been watching all year and being treated to, like, what I felt like was the best game all the whole season. Maybe you think that left, like, a positive impact on people's, you know, impression of the league?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like John Granger used to say, that is the Grey Cup to the East. You know,
To Hamilton and Toronto.
That's right. There was no better game than that all season. Let me tell you that.
Yeah,
it has the jam. You know, the you know,
even
our
the atmosphere
Labor
at
Day
Rogers
game.
Center was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Way better game than the Grey Cup itself or the West Final, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
I watch
it once in a while, and it bothers me when I watch it. So.
Right. I had a friend that actually watched the CFL for the first time last year. He caught the second half of the Grey Cup game. And he lives down in South Carolina. And he's a member of the group now, man. And right now he's like, man, I'm like the number one Red Black fan, man. So I'm Ottawa. That's going to be my new team, you know. So a lot of people are tuning in to the CFL, man, over in the States. I mean, you will be surprised. I think we're getting more members from the stateside in our group now.
Now, on a positive spin to a negative situation, is here's a question for the four of you: is the negotiation and because of the negotiation and the, you know, what appears to be, you know, they're at loggerheads and they could actually go on strike in the long run? Even in the short term, do you think that this is a positive, you know, do you believe in the theory that it doesn't matter what you say about me, but if you say my name, you know, the media thing, you know, I don't care, you know, just spell my name right. You know what I mean? Like, is this in a way a positive advertising campaign that the league and the Players Association are backing into? I'll start with you, Manasseh. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, when you read everything, you know, you keep hearing the same thing repeated over and over again, which is, oh, the CFL's got all these new stadiums, they got all this TV money coming in, the league hasn't been this healthy in years, and so, you know, it's positive publicity. And most people, you know, when I read on Facebook, they're just shocked, like, they couldn't believe the CFL's having a strike, because most people didn't think the CFL had money to strike over, so, you know, it's working out.
Mike?
Yeah, it's working out, man. You know, if you look at some of the stadiums that are being built and the stadiums that's being built, and I looked at the picture Manasseh sent me, man, about the Saskatchewan stadium that's going to be built. I mean, you got some of these stadiums, man, that's looking better than some of these NFL stadiums.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They have. Not all, but you have some. And, you know, to be the CFL, a lot of people don't think that they have the money to build these big stadiums. They, you know, if they're not watching this league, man, they don't know nothing about it. And hearing that the CFL is going on strike, a lot of people are like, wait a minute, the CFL going on strike? I mean, they're not million-dollar players, but, I mean, hey, who cares? They might not be million-dollar players, but they have the right to strike if they want more money also, you know. So this strike here is big publicity, man, especially for people that haven't never tuned into the CFL game that's waiting to see what is this CFL is all about this season, because this is an exciting season, especially when you have an expansion team coming out. And whatever the Red Blacks do as far as, ticket sales and crowd sales is going to tell a tale on whether the CFL will do another expansion in the next 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. I think within 5 at least. To add to what you're saying, doesn't it seem a little bit, guys, like, you know, the CFL and the Players Association, with this situation going on, it sends a message out there that they're as important as any other league because they're just as screwed up?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
100% agree.
Why yep. do you agree? Why do you agree, Bruce?
Because it's true. I don't know. Because it's true. Just you hit the nail on the head, man. You know.
And it just mm-hmm. raises the bar on the league because there's something. You know, there's some, you know, it's like Manasseh said that, you know, nobody understands or believes that these guys actually had money to fight over, and yeah. it turns out maybe they do. And if they do, that must mean that they're actually better than I thought. You know, or is it more important than I thought? Kelly, how mm-hmm. about you on some of these comments we've just put out there? And then we'll go to Bruce.
Yeah, no, you know, I think the CFL has been very intelligent with what they've done this round of CBAs. And even, you know, as much as I've maybe suggested that they've been a bit underhanded as well, you have to give it to them for, you know, their timing and execution on all of their strategy in this round. And they really have KO'd the players. I feel that the players were unprepared. When they were given, you know, when they did address the fans and the media, it was too little too late. People had already made up their mind and chose the league's position, and yeah, that's I see the players having to concede, and you know, I'm hoping that they get the shortest deal possible and that they get a document in writing that the league will talk about not revenue sharing as much
profit
as
sharing.
profit sharing right,
you know, that's where you know. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just that the players, we understand, okay, yeah. They never really, you know, started using the language revenue sharing until about midway through this negotiation, and I think they made an error there in using that
yes.
word.
Yes.
It was profit sharing all along. They had said that with the Marwan Hage statements that as if the owners are willing to lose, then we're willing to lose with them. That's what that meant, is they meant profit sharing, not revenue sharing.
But
and that's the way it'll go.
Kelly, but with a qualification, and the players do feel that there should be some pressure on the teams to be responsible on how they budget and how they spend money.
Yep.
You know, it isn't the first time that I heard the comment that Jason Pottinger made, which is, you know, and you got to read between the lines. Coaches, only the players aren't guaranteed. You know, only the players are in the position where their contracts aren't guaranteed. And I truly believe that's a real sore point for the players.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know
assuming
that
risk.
There's... Yeah, you know, I don't know that there's a way for them to, you know, I don't know, to have some sort of level of guaranteed contracts. That's all in the negotiation and all that. But it bothered Pottinger enough to say that, you know, his own team, when he was with them, the Argos, were paying for three coaches, right? But, you know, they can't pay players. They let them go and they don't get paid. But, you know, it's all about, there has to be some responsibility on everyone's part when it comes to how much it costs the league. I believe the players don't want to be the only way to, you know, to control costs. Now, does anyone in here disagree that pretty much they're the only way to control costs in the league? Or is there another way to control costs and or, you know, streamline the league? Or is it just with the players? Benasse, do you think it's just the players that, you know, are under the bus when they get thrown under the bus?
Yeah, you can't guarantee a football contract. Like in the NFL, players' contracts aren't guaranteed as well, because it's only 16 games in the NFL, 18 games in the CFL, including playoffs.
Yep.
And you look at, you know, baseball, hockey, all the other sports, they're guaranteed because those guys have to play like an 82 game or more regular season. And in the case of the football, it's too easy for guys to just fake an injury and sit out half the year, the whole year, if that. And just cash the checks, you know? And the team
can't
afford to have guys doing that. That's why in the NFL it's the same way. They don't guarantee contracts, and they'll never do that. So,
nope.
They get signing bonuses. That's their guaranteed money.
They do get money guaranteed. It's up front.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And can I add on to what Manasseh was saying also? A lot of the highest paid player that's going to be in the NFL, just like the CFL, is going to be the quarterback. A lot of these guys, man, after their taxes and everything in NFL, they might come out of maybe, what, $250,000, $300,000 checks a year out of the NFL, and their biggest money they're going to get is going to be at the end of their contract that they never usually see.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Other than the portion up front.
Right. So
yep,
in the middle,
yep,
it's just
it.
In the middle, the contracts, the money's pedestrian at best.
Low. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. You talk all pro like Nate Newton with the Dallas Cowboys. That guy's broke already, you know. Like.
But that's a testament to something else. That's a whole nother show.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, you know, the unfortunate human nature thing, you know, and you know, the average human nature, I'm going to say that some people are really good about it, some people not so much, mm-hmm. is that we all think that it's going to go on forever. You know, there is no end to this. I am going to continue to make millions of dollars for a very long time. And a lot of them don't know how to save and don't know how to, you know, they just don't. Most of these guys are guys that come from places where they don't really know that kind of money. You know, it's a real, you know, it's a real tough learning curve for them. And then they attach themselves to people. I mean, let's face it. There's the odd scoundrel out there that we've heard, you know, from athletes who have, you know, trusted people, invested trustingly, and ended up being as much as ripped off as anything. Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, you know, so you know, it's not an easy life for a football player, but they have far more opportunity than a lot of other people, and that's something. When I talk about loving the players in the CFL and all that kind of stuff, there is an opportunity for them if they are fortunate enough to not pick up any real serious physical problems either immediately or that, you know, develop in their 50s. They have a great opportunity in life. They have an education that they can get if they're good football players, and colleges are willing to bring them on to their teams. They get great contracts. They spend a lifetime once they, you know, get into high school and they're so good. The ones that are in the NFL, the ones that are in the CFL even, spend a lot of great time from high school right to when they become a pro. They're almost godlike as far as, especially in football towns, especially in football communities. So they have the life of Riley for a very long time. So I don't want to sit here and say, poor CFL players, and oh my God, that's so rough on them. You know, they have a pretty good life. The Canadian players, not so much. They're more. They love the game, and they wanna really play the game more than some of the American players. I hope I don't sound like a bigot when I say that, Manasseh.
No. And if I could add, like, these CFL guys, I don't think they realize just how much of a blessing in disguise it is to be in the CFL rather than the NFL. And what a lot of people don't know is 75% NFL players, after they retire, go broke within 2 years.
Yeah.
And the reason is, once you get paid that amount of money, and especially a lot of these guys get it right out of college, and so they're in their early 20s getting million-dollar checks, and they just their spending goes right with their income, and it matches it, and then sometimes goes above it to the point where these guys have no concept of operating in the real world, and then they rack up all this debt, and then their lives are totally ruined. But these CFL guys, they get the benefit of playing football and then still have to operate in the real world. Like, you look at Kevin Glenn, right? Kevin Glenn hasn't been one of the highest-paid players. He's been right around that 100K
average,
mark.
Average, yeah.
But right now, he's got four Tim Hortons in Detroit along with other businesses. Because playing in the CFL, you make enough for a living, and if you're wise with it, you can invest it and make things happen, and you're still humble enough where you can still understand how to operate in the real world, man. So, in the long run, these guys will be better off.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right, man. The humblest of the humblest thing I've ever seen was John Ryan. I was working a public service job about 8 years ago, maybe. Bumped into him at my job. He pulled up, guys, in a little Nissan Micra. He is such a down-to-earth guy. I think the CFL prepared him for that, not only just coming from Regina, but from a football is my business aspect. I agree with everything Manasseh and both Manasseh and you, Frank, have said. It makes sense.
And you know, the thing of it is to flesh out what you're alluding to, if people haven't gathered it. I think because the CFL doesn't pay the extreme amounts of money, but these guys have been given educations that, unfortunately, when you make a lot of money, you don't respect or think about using that education. It's almost wasted on the guys who make $2 million a year. You get guys who go, holy crap, I'm not going to make $2 million a year. Wait a second, I have an education. Wait a second. I got an opportunity. I won't make so much money, but I can make enough money that I can invest in myself and or others and see what I can do, even if it's just invest in myself to get a job. And there are a lot of players in the CFL. I got one, Dwight Edwards, who he's at his third car dealership in my area. And I bought a car in all three dealerships, but never got one through him, because what happens in those dealerships is as soon as you talk to a salesman, that guy's your guy, and there's a record of it. But I've always said hello to Dwight, and his son plays for the Toronto Rock. I just found that out, which is weird. So these guys set themselves, and I'm not really digressing that much, because essentially what they do when they come to Canada, even the American players, they almost don't want to leave because they actually have Belton Johnson, who's been on this show a few times. You know, it's only about a job. It's not about them being millionaires. It's only about them meeting somebody here, getting married, starting a family, and living the kind of life that the fans live that are in the stands in the CFL. And I find that just totally heartwarming. I know it sounds corny, but I'm a corny guy. What can I say?
No, it doesn't sound like it. You know what? Belton Johnson is one of the nicest guys you will ever meet in person, and he is one guy. He's not in the CFL anymore. I haven't personally, on one-to-one, face-to-face, talked to him since he left the Cats. This would be 3 years ago now, and he always gets back to people on Facebook or Twitter whatever other social media is. He is one stand-up individual, just as an individual.
Yep. And you'll be happy to know, Bruce, you'll be happy to know, Bruce, that he had a bunch of Thai cats over for a barbecue at the Grey Cup, and
post his pictures and that on
He was pulling for the Thai cats. He was loyal to the Thai cats and lives in Saskatchewan. I mean, how much more of a CFL guy as much as we, as rude as you are to me as an Argo fan, Bruce, I forgive
it's
you for that.
It's all fun, though. We know that.
It's that's exactly it. It's
just
all
like
in
you
fun.
Just like you were in an Ergo jersey or an Ergo hoodie to a Tie Cats banquet.
There you go. It's and Belton Johnson is a perfect example of what makes the CFL so good for a lot of American players who come up here.
Absolutely. Let me tell you a little story here, a 30-second story. Actually, my next-door neighbor, Max, he's just like me, a fan, and he and Belton went out for supper. Just him and Belton had a one-on-one discussion the night he left Hamilton. Now, how many other pro athletes can you say that you had dinner with a pro athlete on his last night in town? You know?
Pretty amazing.
I thought that was so cool.
It is cool.
You know,
it's
cool.
Awesome.
You know, and
awesome.
Another Otis Floyd, if you remember him, he owns a car wash too. So he had his head straight when he played for us. And he's another guy I know another guy, Millsy, Dave Miller. He actually Otis came over to his house. They watched a football together in his basement, chilled and had a couple of drinks. And then Otis went home. Like, you know, that to me is way better than anything. You know, that would be such an honor to have a Tie Cat come into my basement and take a look at my stuff that I've collected. But actually, I found out, and I never knew that, but C.J. Gable and, he's still here, but Siobhan Walker used to be roommates together last year, and my next-door neighbor's brother rented them the house. So you never know who's going to pop by, you know?
Yeah, no,
guys, I want to ask a question to everybody, but particularly Mike and Manasse. When's the first time you're going to see an American kid choose a Canadian university as his route to the CFL?
Let me see. Yeah. Well, actually, man, you know what? You have a lot of kids that and you can look it up on the net that from Detroit, Michigan. That actually goes to, like, the University of Windsor.
Yeah, right.
And plays football. Because a lot of kids from Detroit go to University of Windsor, man, and play football over there. I don't know too much about their football program, but I know I've been on there on their website and looked at the Canadian to American ratio, and we have a lot of Detroit kids that go to University of Windsor.
For sure.
Yeah, we have the same thing here with the University of Manitoba. Like, a lot of people leave here, they go up to Winnipeg or, you know, just to go to school. Because, you know, you guys already know school's free basically there. And there's actually Americans that can apply and be allowed to go to school for free in Canada as well. So there's a lot of people that do that. But similar to your point, though, Kelly, is I know a lot of guys from my area that actually played in CFL. And a lot of guys pretty much moved to Canada and just stay there permanently. And, you know, in Saskatchewan, tons of guys that go out there, they get jobs in the oil fields and different places, and they just get that new, like, for a lot of guys to come out of a bad neighborhood or in a bad environment to go to a new country and get new opportunities. And a lot of guys don't know, most of these American guys, they end up staying in Canada. Like, I remember talking to Jamal Johnson on Facebook, and he told me about how going out to Vancouver and just being in a different place and that exposure, you know, it changed his life. And now he's got a whole new direction in life that he wouldn't have had if he hadn't come to Canada. So it's been great, man, across the board for everybody.
So,
you know,
the life of a football player.
My lady
go ahead. Sorry, go ahead,
Canada.
Mike. Nope. Go, Mike.
No, I was just saying, I actually talked to Evan about moving to Canada, man. Windsor, Toronto area. I mean, hey, I love Canada myself. I love
it. For sure. And, you know, right now Don Narcisse, he has a son named Don Narcisse Jr. who plays his high school ball in Manville, Texas, right outside of Houston. He's thinking about coming up to go to U of R as his pathway to the CFL. And that's kind of why I asked that question.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you were...
Team Knicks did that with the Regina Rams, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, that's right.
He came up from New Orleans,
Team
went
Hicks.
There, and he was drafted in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken.
Back to New Orleans.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, we're gonna take a short break, and we can continue and banter on. For those of you that are listening, this is the Candid Frank Live Show, and we all believe that the CFL is the best football in the world. This is edition number 175, and 25, I didn't do a special 100 show, didn't even acknowledge that I did the 100th show, but you know what? It's not about glory. As much as we've talked about, and as Christopher has mentioned about the satisfaction of being appreciated, really, it's not about the glory, it's about being appreciated. And I love the idea of being appreciated. And we all, you know, we're small town guys. We wouldn't love the CFL if we didn't have a small town mentality. I truly believe that. So we'll take a short break. And when we come back, we'll discuss some more. Now, I have an interview here with Rocky DiPietro. And the sound's not bad with his, but I had some problems, as Bruce will acknowledge. It was a pretty loud place. There weren't millions of people there, but enough to make a lot of noise, and everybody had a lot of fun. Rocky DiPietro is one of my favorite Hamilton Tiger Cats. The guy was a clutch guy. He was clutch.
Rocky DiPietro.
I love him.
Wow. So what have you been doing since your retirement?
Well, it seemed like such a long time ago. I'm a high school teacher. I teach in Fort Colborne, Lakeshore Catholic High School. I teach special education, coach a little football.
Tell us about the team you coach.
Well, it's been a pretty good program over the years. I started at Lakeshore in 1998, I believe. We've been very successful. We've won 3 Golden Horseshoe championships and been to the Rogers Center quite a number of times. So we've had a good crop of kids that have come in over the years, and it's been very enjoyable for me to give back.
I have the opportunity to talk to a lot of young players that are playing CIS, up for the draft, that kind of thing. And I'm always amazed at how enthusiastic they are about the game and even about being a Canadian playing football. What are the differences in your mind between kids that play in Canada to ones that play in the United States? Because, you know, the CFL is not, you know, a 40-team league.
No, it's not. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, sometimes Canadian kids feel like the underdog and, you know, feel like they have something to prove. And it's nice to see, you know, I see more and more kids getting a chance to play in the NFL, getting drafted into the NFL, playing in, colleges, U.S. colleges. But, you know, we still have pretty good players back here. Our university leagues are very strong, very competitive, and very entertaining. So, you know, you can say what you want about the NFL, but as far as I'm concerned, CFL, 3-down football, is still the most exciting football.
The game is never sure. You're not assured of winning at any point in the game. You were known as a game breaker. You just brought in a young kid. You guys drafted a kid from Western, local guy. You're just talking about here, you know, and he's one of those local kids. It must be wonderful to play close to where you grew up.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great. I'm not from Hamilton, but I always felt like I was. You know, I was very attached to the city, and you know, had a great opportunity for him. Hopefully, not a lot of pressure. He doesn't feel a lot of pressure. To perform, but great opportunity for him. I think it's great for the fans to see a homegrown kid do well.
Well, I know he's happy to be playing for the Ticats, and I'm sure the Ticats fans will be happy to be there. Rocky DiPietro, my goodness, a lot of great memories and screaming at you to drop the ball.
Yeah, I really hated that guy when he was playing against the Argos. Damn it. Like, just, you know, we all have those guys, right? The guys we love to hate. Let me ask you the question. He was one of the guys, really honestly, I felt so lucky that he was there. He was one of my favorite Hamilton Tiger Cats of his era. And he was such a frustrating opponent. First of all, do you guys agree that he was that frustrating, starting with you, Kelly?
Yeah, for sure. You know, went head-to-head with him in the great 89 Grey Cup, and you know, he was always a legitimate threat to what Ray Elgard brought the Rough Riders, and you know, could the Rough Riders outdo, can't remember the quarterback at the time now, but yeah, and DiPietro, you know, and then, of course, Tony Champion came in, but DiPietro actually took all the double teams, and Champion was wide open for a lot of his catches.
Well, Champion was the flash, and mm-hmm. And DiPietro was that important first down that was necessary to tie things together to get to the end zone. Right, Bruce?
Absolutely, buddy. Oski Wee-Wee.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. And Derek McAdoo, keeping everybody off balance.
Mike Townsend, do you have any memories of Rocky DiPietro, and do you think that he was that tough an opponent? Okay, let's go to Manasseh. Manasseh?
Yeah, I don't have any memories of that. That's before my time. But the
there
guy
you go.
Now that's probably the closest to that for me would be John Cornish. And when I was rooting for the Riders, he was that guy, the Stamps as a whole, but him particularly is just a guy that I couldn't stand, and he was so good on, and he was so hard to stop the guy. And I'm sure Kelly probably feels the same way a little bit. But
oh, for sure.
I don't know. He's the closest thing the CFL has to a guy like that to me today.
Who is your guy, Kelly? If it isn't John Cornish, you know, who's
right,
your
right
next
now?
Guy? Yeah.
Right
the
now?
Guy you hate to play against.
Jeez, who's a Rider killer? I would say, you know what?
Zach
Durie
Caleros.
Had some. Durie was the key
Andre
in
Durie?
Those games. Man, he has been a headache for the Riders lately.
Yeah, and you know, as much as Caleros got all that credit, Durie came up with some really key short passes for first down, breaking tackles. Yeah, I agree. I see why you'd say that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Mike, are you back? I think Mike's having trouble. Okay, so we got Manasseh. Okay, now your turn, Bruce. What player
I'm back.
Do you hate to play against?
Honestly, and Chad Owens, man.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for? Not abuse, but...
harass.
Harass him and put him down, but you know what? He can come play for us any day of the week. And
well, he's an Argo. That's possible. He's an Argo.
You know,
that's possible.
Well, you never know. But, you know, him and, I might call him Crybaby Owens, but he gets the job done, buddy. You know,
do you guys agree that he's the best player in the league?
I do.
Yep.
I do. But, I
Not by last year. The year before, maybe.
No, not by last year. Not by last year. No.
He had a so-so year for him. For him. Because he is.
He's still the most dynamic guy. You know what I mean?
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
It's most dynamic. But there are some real close challengers. And I mean, you know, you just have to look to the Ultimate Fighting Challenge this weekend. And, you know, the heavily favored Hannon Brow. Dropped by T.J. Dillashaw. Like, it can happen on any night, David versus Goliath. You can see it go down. But like I said, Andre Durie, Cornish, as Manasseh mentioned, Bruce's adversary there, Chad Owens. They're all, I mean, dynamic guys who can hurt you.
The elite of the elite.
Yeah.
The guy that scares me the most and worries me the most, because I'm an Argo fan, and as horrible as this is for me to say, but I have to say, the guy that worries me more than anything isn't a player. He's a coach and a GM. Kent Austin. That guy pisses me off because he's so smart. He pisses me off.
I thought Frank was going to say Wally Buono, man. I was going to say, oh, my gosh.
No, Kent Austin, because with us, with the Argos, it's all about Hamilton. The rest of your teams couldn't exist. There could be a league with just Hamilton and Toronto, and there would be sellouts every day for 16 games.
You don't think Andy Fantuz is that guy? Because every time I watch, it's like
he
has his best games against the Argos.
Yeah, no. Sure he is. But I don't mean to, I'm not trying to say that he isn't. I'm just saying, but even more Kent Austin, because that guy is the biggest problem we the Argo fans have. He is the biggest problem. But if you're going to go to a player, absolutely, Fantuz. There's, you know, I just talked about Rocky DiPietro, and you know what, Fantuz is today's version of Rocky DiPietro. He's the guy that makes the catches that don't look like, you know, like they're not flashy. You know, he just makes that 10th yard. You know, he always figures out a way, even if he
bring
can't
that ball
run.
In.
Yeah, and
yeah.
he brings it in, and he doesn't have to be fancy and knock guys down because he gets to the, you know, the 10-yard, he gets to the marker. You know, that's what's frustrating about him. You know, he doesn't, even if you pull him down right away, it's too late. He already got the first down. And that's what's scary about that guy. And
he's
I love
that. A long reach and huge hands.
Yeah. And long legs.
In the CFL, they don't have the tight end position, but that's what he is. He's a tight end.
He is, absolutely.
And,
he is.
He just you see him out there, he does basketball moves on guys. He just bodies guys, boxes them out.
Yeah.
You know, all kind of stuff. So he uses
his size so much to his advantage. It's freaking scary.
Like, I guess Jason Claremont would be of the same breed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And
you
these
know,
are guys.
And you know who's going to come out really good this year is that Greg Ellingson. He got injured last year. But,
you missed him.
Are going to happen with him this year. I'm going
to
say
that.
To the son of the Duke. Son of the Duke.
Yeah.
So big things.
Another guy's Kerry Koch. I don't know. I don't know if you know him, Bruce.
Yeah,
but he just joined Hamilton.
Okay.
He's got the speed. He's basically going to be your speed guy down the field, and he's gonna be amazing. I think he's gonna have a breakout here.
We'll keep my eyes open for him. Then what's his last name?
Koch.
All right,
he'll stand out because he'll be like the fastest white guy you've ever seen in your life. Like he's,
there you go.
You're going to know him right away.
And that's
a Western wrestler.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to
it.
The next,
you know what?
10 days.
Wait till they see the play of Chad Shillings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that's the guy we didn't talk about.
Right.
That guy's going to dominate. Wow.
Yes.
Go tell us
Detroit
a little
Lion,
bit about
baby.
Him. Those of us that don't know him that well, Manasseh.
I mean, Mike, do you want to...
You want to do it, Mike?
6'4", 235, 240.
Holy
big wide receiver, man. And,
another tight end?
Has the hands. Yeah, he looks like a tight end, but he plays wide receiver. And the only reason Chad Shillings didn't stick in Detroit was for the numbers game. That was it. Because we had Calvin Johnson. Who else?
Is this
we
the kid that's with
a lot of receivers.
Is this the guy Saskatchewan picked up?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he basically his body looks like Terrell Owens, man.
Oh God.
Yeah. he's gonna be massive. Like you can tell Durant right out the gate is just gonna go to him every play.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure.
And
Saskatchewan has improved. Even though they lost Dressler with Ty Smith and Chillis, man, Durant gonna be going down the field with them long balls a lot. And he got somebody that can go up there and get it.
No doubt.
So, is Chillens one of these guys that we'll see in the CFL for a few years and then he'll resurface in the NFL?
Yep.
I think he's going to be a CFLer for the next 5+ years. He's one of those guys that the CFL, there's a certain hidden code to getting a star CFL player for long term. He's either got to have some type of injury history or a size issue or something that he's good enough to be in the NFL, but isn't there? Like a Zach Caleros, right?
Okay.
Caleros is 25, and he's like 5'10". I don't even think he's 5'10". He's like 5'9".
I hear you.
But
so
because of his size, he'll never get called up. But he'll be a guy that the next 10 years will be dominant in the CFL.
I think he could get called back because if you look at the history in Saskatchewan, you got several guys that are about his size that have gotten a real good shot down there, and that's Jamal Richardson, Matt Dominguez, Alexander, who else? The list goes on and on, you know what I mean? Like, of the Rough Riders, fan twos, you know, like, teams look to Saskatchewan for their receivers. They'll be watching what he's doing. If he has a 1,000-yard season consecutive years, there's going to be some NFL teams knocking.
Yeah, isn't it fair also to say, guys, we've seen a wonderful resurgence of talent in the CFL that has caught the eye of the NFL? And wouldn't it be fair to say, without getting into the CBA and all that crap, but the less the players get paid, the more, the more players are going to be willing to go to the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Like, the bigger the temptation will be to go to the NFL. And does that have a positive or a negative effect? Because really, it's hard to gauge that. You know, when a league like the CFL that is without intending to be, a feeder league to the NFL, which they will be, because there aren't many leagues out there that are as credible as the CFL. Yes, we talk about indoor football and all that, and I know the love of it for you, Mike, and Manasseh. But really, it won't hurt the CFL to have players. I've said this before, and can you agree, even if salaries don't go the way the players want, the opportunity to play in the NFL will still be there. And the temptation, the more the temptation is for a player to go to the NFL, he's dragging along another couple of players, you know, at least in the interest and in the eyes of the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it depends on the guy, though. Like S.J. Green
Express.
And Jamel Richardson, both of those guys are NFL caliber receivers. But Montreal stepped forward, put $200K on the table, and those guys. And I listened to an interview where S.J. Green basically said, "I could either make $450,000 to $1 million and be basically the sixth string in the NFL, or I could take $200K and be the man here." And he said, "I'd rather be on the field playing and contributing." So that's a choice guys have to make. What matters?
And lifestyle. As we've established on this program earlier, there's also a lifestyle that you have here that you don't have in the United States. And it may or may not be a positive, but I think it's a positive.
Mm-hmm. Of course it's a positive. And also with the guys that's getting called up to go to the NFL from the CFL, you also have, like I stated before when we talked about this, you have some guys that's in the NFL looking at the CFL like, "Hey, man, maybe I need to go over here and play instead of sitting on the end of this bench and make that $200,000, $250K and play."
Yeah.
I mean, because if you think about it, man, this year's NFL draft, and I'm not bringing the NFL to talk about the CFL, but I'm about to try to make a point.
No, go
this
ahead.
Year's NFL draft, did you see how many quarterbacks were taken in the later rounds?
Yeah.
Like Taj Boyd was picked, was drafted by the New York Jets. And you had, I can't think
and
of the guy's name, but it's like.
And
my
your
point
is.
McCarron. Yeah.
My point is, within the next 2 to 3 years, the CFL quarterback carousel is going to go like swinging doors. These guys that have been drafted in these later rounds, good quarterbacks, going to be in the CFL. I mean, guys like Henry Burris is going to be retiring. Travis Lule might be stepping out the door. Dan Durant, he might play a couple more years. I mean, you know, all the teams. You're going to see some of these guys that you watched in college, man, these good quarterbacks from the NFL going to be coming to the CFL. It just a matter of time. When the old quarterback's out, the quarterback's in.
And let me ask then this question, because this question, I think, begs the asking. No matter how much the salary cap goes up, again, without talking about the CBA directly, no matter how much the salary cap goes up, I think we all know supply and demand. And what is the biggest demand in the CFL? It's quarterbacks or key positions like running backs. That extra money is going to go towards the quarterbacks, the running backs, the key positions that Americans provide in the CFL, and will make it that much more attractive for those players to find their way, like you're intimating, to the CFL.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of hoping that Canadian running backs could really take in and, like, you know, like become almost like a designated spot, because it'd be better if all that import money was put towards receivers and quarterbacks, so that those positions could be, you know, more solid. Because you don't need an American running back. I think it's been proven. You can get a good Canadian, plug him in there, and he can play just fine.
We Argo fans are hoping Coombs is one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Coombs is not really a running back, though. I mean, you got to.
From the backfield, somebody running, because Drury, as far as I'm concerned, isn't a running back either. But.
Let's see.
I didn't mean to silence you guys.
My thing is, I wish I could figure out, man, which team own the rights to certain players, man, because I'm going to tell you, if Darian Durant would ever retire, man, Taj Boyd would fit that Saskatchewan Rough Rider offense to a T.
Just a little factoid here. Do you know who Darian Durant's negotiating rights were gained by Saskatchewan? Do you know who we got those off of?
Who?
Wasn't that Eric Tillman got them off Hamilton?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the Getzlaff deal, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Win and win.
Yeah.
Win and win.
Yep. So, you know, I mean, you look back, what about Darien in gold and black, you know? Like, come on. That could have been
What about Anthony Cavillo? Used to be in Hamilton, and they ran him
out of town. Yeah, I know.
God, Hamilton had a terrible track record with players, man. They just they let so many good players
go. Tough place to grow up.
You know, in fairness to Hamilton, before you, you know, let's also understand that there's a fit that's required.
Yeah, it's called winning.
Yeah.
So basically the problem.
Well,
hey,
you can call it that. You can call it whatever you want, but there's a fit that's required. And winning is all part of it, of course. But you know, the right player can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, that goes without saying. Like Ricky Ray, if he had stayed in Edmonton, seriously, guys, would he have had a Grey Cup ring in 2012?
Maybe.
Nope.
I mean, 2011. Well, I'm interested. In final.
That piques my interest right there. You're saying maybe he would have won a Grey Cup with Edmonton in 2012?
Yeah,
maybe.
Because in 2011 they were 11-7. There was a three-way tie for first place, and they were in the Western Final. So they were knocking on the door. That's why the trade never didn't make any sense to me. That's why I knew it was a money thing. It had nothing to do with on the field.
Didn't Hervey retire in between 11 and 12?
No, Hervey was long gone. I mean, that was that whole thing was Eric
Tillman. Tucker.
No, Tucker was gone too. He was a receivers coach in Saskatchewan by that point.
Yeah, I think was their best shot when they had Hervey and Tucker, and I can't remember who was back at that time. I guess it was McCarty still.
Hervey and you're talking about like 2006, man. That's like way back. Those guys.
Yeah,
I think
that
Tucker
was
retired
best.
By 08.
They had Hugh.
Shot.
They had Hugh in 2012. You know, so
Charles.
So you know. Yeah, Charles. They had him, you know, and their team was, like Manasseh says, on the cusp. But from what I understand is there was a real disappointment from the fan base in Ricky Ray. They felt that...
Oh, come on, Frank. That's just, you know, that's the political spin that
they
have to say.
Okay, fair enough.
Come on.
So all right, well, I'll tell you what. Okay, so we'll leave that at the point where Ricky Ray went for political reasons, went to Toronto, and thank you very much. He brought a great cup to the city, and I'm very grateful for it. And I want to thank Edmonton for making the dumb move. But, you know, what's important...
Edmonton got repaid, though, because you realize what happened, right? Was Mike Riley...
The BC
Lions, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers had a better trade on the table to get Mike Riley to come to Winnipeg, but Brayley decided to send him to Edmonton instead of sort of like a payback.
I hear what you're saying.
So they got their guy back on the loan.
Yeah, and that's cool. Like you know, you know, we all agree that Riley healthy will be a real danger. Like we talked about players that'll kill you. That's a guy that's going to kill teams. He's going to kill teams. If he has an offensive line, we all agree on that. That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right? You get an offensive line, man. He's dangerous. He's dangerous.
Yeah, and that's the guy. That's the next big star. If Edmonton does, and Chris Jones. I'm confusing my Christophers now. My Christopher Jones. Chris Jones. If he can, as a head coach, and along with the GM, which you know. You know, if they can work out maybe making sure those four young guys they have, because they're very young at the offensive line position, if those guys pan out, watch out. Because if Riley gets any time to throw the ball, the rest of the league might as well realize one very important issue. They better cut his time that he has to throw the ball because that guy is scary.
Yeah, that's a good point. But you know what's even more scary, especially for you, Frank? Yeah. Alfred Stamps?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
But he needs help.
Mike Riley's overrated, man. I don't know why you guys think that he's as good as you guys advertise. Like, Chris Jones has already been on the record saying he's not that high on
him. You're right.
Open
you're
competition.
Right.
And do you know why? The reason is all his stats, go back and look at the games. The first three quarters, Mike Riley always struggled. All his numbers came in the fourth quarter, what we call garbage time. where the defense would drop back and play soft because Edmonton would always be down by like 21 points by the fourth quarter, and they'd always have to just scramble back, and that's when they would get their yards.
But
the guy that you really need to be watching out for is Zach Collaros in Hamilton, and they're about to take over the East. Like, I feel bad for Argo fans because you guys are going to watch Hamilton become basically a dynasty.
Don't feel bad. Seriously, this Argo fan. Don't feel bad about this Argo fan. I'll tell you right now.
For
me, yeah, maybe.
John's going to have some.
I'll let him talk for himself. He's busy, obviously, probably napping, making a sandwich. For me, I love the idea that Zach Collaros is going to be the quarterback for Hamilton. And I'll say this to Bruce, who's here with us. You know, Bruce, if you were in my position, don't you think that he would be a great motivator for your team?
Well, I'm very pleased with the outcome now. I wasn't in the beginning, but, you know, cooler heads prevail. And an hour ago, your worst fear is Ken Austin, and he's going to prove it. Why? You know, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm talking about Collaros, and I'm talking about the attitude of the players on the team. You know, he will be a lightning rod for the Argos' motivation to beat Hamilton. And that's why, Manasseh, I'm not that worried. I happen to think that it is going to be the ambition of the Argos organization to really make that guy look ordinary, pedestrian.
Yeah.
Will they be able to do it? Will they be able to do it? That's we don't know. You know, until the game starts, we can speculate all we want.
All the other D coordinators are going to be tuning in. You better believe that.
But that's the same when Henry Lewis went back. You know, where did we pick him up from? Calgary, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so in his first game back in Calgary, it was the same thing. It's going to be the same thing with Collaros. It's going to be the same thing with Burris when Ottawa comes here, you know?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's fair.
I still believe that when Henry Burris comes back for his first game, he'll get a standing ovation, you know?
He sure will.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't he?
Exactly. Why wouldn't he?
The only place where he won't is Regina. He'll always be the calls for Henry.
I disagree. He's going to get a standing ovation in Regina thanks to the great cup.
I heard they treated him with respect just before the game, and then once the game's on, it's a different story.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, as a man, you're in our hearts, but... on the field, it's all
that's right. Like I'll give Henry a standing ovation, but I'll also stand up when they lose.
Yeah,
there you go.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, guys. We're gonna discuss the CBA, but it's not going to be the CBA like you know, just open opinions. It's going to be I received the CFLPA statement to facts, and I'm gonna ask your opinions on just tell me real quick. We only have about 23 minutes left, so there's a couple of facts. And I'll read the CFLPA statement of facts, and I lost – I'm going to have to call him again. I don't know whether he left on purpose or by accident, and I'm referring to Kelly. I'll give him another call just in case he didn't leave on purpose. Anyway, we'll start by saying this, okay? Here is the statement, and I'm going to read what the CFLPA sent me in regards to what they feel – is the way one should look at the league at this point and why they feel they have the right to offer or make demands, however you want to cut it. It's up to you how you want to cut it. Okay, for immediate release, this came out on Sunday, May 25th, 2014, which would be just yesterday. All right, so he didn't answer, so maybe he's not interested in being on the program. I'll give it another shot. Sunday, May 25th, 2014, CFLPA statement to facts. Stony Creek, Ontario, which is just down the road from me. The CFL Players Association and President Scott Flory feel that it is important to clarify a number of points and outline specific information from three separate documents issued by the CFL. The first was a direct letter to every veteran player, the second, an open letter to Canadian Football League fans, which included me, and the third, CBA Myths and fax the latter two posted directly to CFL.ca, which we all had an opportunity to see. I have also included other information as per the links below, where the league has made statements that are now contrary to negotiating position. In spite of the league ambushing, these are his words, okay, this is Flory's words, the PA executive and strategically breaking the trust of our media agreement during our last attempt to negotiate a new deal on Wednesday, May 21st, the CFLPA Executive Negotiation Committee have utilized our time wisely and are now anxious to get back behind closed doors to negotiate in good faith. A deal that will get both parties a fair and equitable CBA that will stand for many years to come. Fact. Mark Cohan boasts about 6 of 8 healthy franchises at the Grey Cup of 2012. So allow me to ask you, gentlemen, of what import is this? Starting with you, Bruce Junich. Do you have a comment on that? And does that mean anything? How about you, Manasseh?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I would say almost 80% of this is total BS, and it's just posturing.
Okay, let's take it point by point. Okay,
let's start from the top.
So, is it
BS
that Mark Cohan boasted that 6 of 8 CFL franchises are healthy at the Grey Cup in 2012?
Yeah. Okay. Perfect example, right? And when he says 6 of 8, the two that he's not counting are Hamilton and Toronto, obviously.
Okay.
The other one that he said was Montreal was breaking even, and that's sort of just a nudge on his part because they've only broken even like 2 years out of their almost 20-year existence in Montreal. And then
so he wasn't really saying that. So it's not true. Really.
No, his statement is accurate, but he put a positive spin on what the reality that the players are ignoring, which is there's only one privately owned team, the Calgary Stampeders, that are making any money.
Okay, so
the rest of the privately owned teams are...
So for the purposes of this statement that was made by the CFLPA, they were taking advantage of a statement made by the commissioner, Cohan, during a time when he was trying to be positive, is your spin on the situation.
Yeah, they basically have no legs, and they're trying to put wooden planks in the place.
It's all good. Mike, how do you feel about that statement? Do you feel it's accurate? Do you feel it's a little misrepresenting by the players? How do you feel?
I'm like Manasseh, man. 6 out of 8 teams are doing well. I mean, you're talking about the two that's really, I'm not going to say not doing well. I mean, are the CFL owners saying that they don't have no money to give these players more money? Is that what they're saying? That they're not making enough to give these guys raises?
No, don't worry about that. Mike, don't worry about that. You know, the CFLPA, the Players Association, is saying that Mark Cohan has boasted, which is bragging about the CFL, and they have 6 of 8 healthy franchises at the Grey Cup of 2012, he said. He said that 6 of the 8 teams are doing fine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Are they interpreting what you believe the Mark Cohan said, or do you think they're stretching it?
I think they're stretching it a little bit.
Okay,
I think
fair enough. That's good. We got other ones here. Player salaries, and this is the next one. Next fact, they're calling it a fact. Player salaries are the only regulated form of spending on the teams. Profitability varies due to differing business models, which is why our proposal is based on revenue. So if you can take that for what that means. Basically what they're saying is that profitability is directly tied to controlling the players' revenue, and that's it. And that's their beef. That's the CFLPA's beef. Do you think that's a fair statement? Fair or foul?
Absolutely not, man. No, that's foul all the way. Like, employees have no right to make a demand or have a issue with the way their employer situates their pay scale. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You know, the employers are the ones who, because it's their business, they get to decide what the employees get paid at the end of the day. And that's basically what we have here. We have employees complaining that they don't like how much they're getting paid. And the obvious answer that every employer would give to you and I is if you want, if you don't think I'm paying you enough, go find another job that'll pay you more. And if these guys can't, which is the, why they're in the CFL, then you have to take what you got, man. That's real life. And these guys are just playing,
yep,
trying to play, you know, make believe. But that's how the real world works. If you don't like your current options, if you don't have something better, then you have to stick with what you got. It's your options that determine your market value. That's how every one of us lives or lives our lives. So I can't take their side because they're trying to get empathy. You know, like my family, we work with refugees in Africa and third world countries, and you know, with orphans, and I know what real poverty is like. The majority of our world lives on $200 a year in income.
But Manasseh,
so
you can't use that.
This is a free country, and it's like any other job. If you don't feel that you're getting respected and getting paid well, then it's your right to go out and strike. That's why you have a union, man.
But here's the beauty of living in Canada and living in a country that we are.
Even in the States, if you're in a union, Frank, and
you're right.
So you,
Bruce,
can't
really... I'm on your side here. I'm on your side.
Okay,
and what I'm going to say, is this, and I hope you agree with me, Bruce, and I hope I'm helping you here. But Manasseh, you can't use how people live in another country, because that has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are working in Canada under the rules designated or the environment that Canada is, okay? You can't sit there and use the fact that there are people in Africa starving, so these guys should be happy to starve a little less. That's just wrong, in my opinion.
They're not starving at all, is my point.
No, but
these
I understand that.
Take the lowest paid player in the CFL, Frank. If he's making $45,000... he's getting that for basically 6 months' work.
Okay.
And under the current CBA, they're only allowed to work
6 months
for 4 hours
work, but look at all the off-season training these guys do, too. These guys don't go
all
there sit on their ass for 6 months over the O2.
That's exercise, man. Most of these guys, if they're smart.
No, come on, man. Exercise is going to the gym 3 times a week. Right? These guys are dedicated all year round.
I think the point that's being made here, I'm going to say against you, is the dedication required to be successful as a CFL player is hyper-intensive. You know, it is not a guy going to the gym once a week for 15 minutes. You have to be, to make it in the CFL, you have to be, you're part of being a viable asset to the CFL is a lot of work.
Again,
have I said it right, guys?
Only, we're talking about 10% of the players make the league minimum. The vast majority of these guys are between 60 to 100,000 a year.
That's all good.
Now, to get that in 6 months, I mean, you guys got it. I'm sorry. I know you guys like the players.
Not arguing that point. We're not here to argue about anything other or debate anything other than the statement made by the CFLPA. And they said, and I repeat, player salaries are the only regulated form of spending on the teams. What they're saying in that one little statement is that they hire 3 coaches, they are obligated to pay for the 3 coaches, and they're not obligated to pay for the players. That is what they're trying to say. Profitability varies due to differing business models, which is why our proposal is based on revenue. So what they're trying to say is, spend the money how you want, league, but don't punish us because of how you spend it. That's what they're saying. So if you have a problem with that, cool. You're saying you have a problem with that theory. I'm saying I don't have a problem with what the players are saying, but they can't use that as an example. Because quite frankly, mistakes are made, and the only way to control that is to make the coaches' contracts not guaranteed, but you're not going to get coaches to sign if their contracts aren't guaranteed. Agreed?
Why wouldn't
Agreed.
You? Why wouldn't you?
Oh, no, I'm just saying,
can't guarantee football players. That's never
that's
the
point.
That's the point.
So why should we guarantee coaches? It's the coaches that develop the players.
No,
right?
Because it's because players can fake injuries, and you only have 18 regular season games. That's the difference between me and you.
I don't think about people faking injuries, man.
I'd like to believe every player out there would like to play the game because they want to play the game. Okay, Bruce, if that was true, the NFL would have guaranteed contracts. The NFL doesn't do it either because they know the reality of football.
Cool. Guys, we're cool with that. Bruce, your dedication to the players is far superior Your dedication to the players is far superior to that of Manasseh. Okay? And that's
but I don't understand why. Why would
but
you
it
have
doesn't
a
matter. Manasseh, it doesn't
they come and
matter.
Go like,
but Manasseh, it doesn't matter
years,
why.
Your whole team
he
is
believes,
like, what?
Manasseh, this is all about opinions.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to go through these things and hear me out. He feels that players deserve a little more respect as far as contracts are concerned. You don't. It's okay. That's the opinions you
it's
guys
It's not about respect, Frank. I'm just saying as an Eastern
no, it
fan,
is.
Whether
it
you
is.
Be a fan
it,
of Hamilton.
If you're the guy, if you're the guy
yeah, I got that,
that
but the point,
team,
Frank, is bigger than that.
Yeah,
if,
no,
if
I get
Kelly,
it.
For
I
example,
get it. But I'm talking about.
Position,
I'm talking. I'm not talking about the players.
That.
I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about Bruce John Inch. And
right.
if you
That's
ask Kelly Bale, will feel the same way. That maybe possibly players put a lot of risk in their game. Like they have a lot of risk. They have an upside and a really friggin' severe downside. They don't get a contract. Their contract doesn't get paid out. And we already discussed the fact that up front they get bonuses and stuff like that that coaches don't get, I guess. I don't know. I shouldn't say that because I don't know for a fact. So the point is, Kelly, I'm sorry if I'm putting words in your mouth. Can I apologize to you?
Yep.
Okay. But I know
you
well enough.
One thing I wanted to say.
Go ahead.
Well, one thing I wanted to say was we can't even really talk about the coaches, guys, because it never really comes into play. The coaches are like a revolving door in the CFL. If they lose a job in one city, they're pretty much immediately snatched up by another, and then their contract becomes that
void.
Team's problem. So,
and their contract
you know
becomes
what
void
I mean?
The previous team.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right?
Exactly. And
there
that's what happens.
Okay.
So we can't even really talk about it with the coaches.
But Kelly, the specifics of the CFLPA's response and their determination of what they consider facts. Okay? And they're saying the fact is,
yeah.
And I don't care why. The point is here, are they telling the truth? And they are telling the truth, that players take all the risk. All right? When it comes to the contract mm-hmm. longevity, you know, and the payment due to a contract, the league can walk away from a contract of a player, can't walk away from a contract of a coach. Yes or no? Is that true?
Yes.
There you go. And that's all I want
it's
to establish.
True in every aspect of life.
Yeah,
well,
no,
where
and,
is that
and
natural?
I'm okay. But Manasseh, I'm okay with it. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying you're right. You're 100% right. But I'm only discussing what they're saying because I want people to understand what the players are saying and their union.
Okay, next
one. Okay. The commissioner's argument that we cannot compare ourselves to other major professional sports leagues is just not true. We are all the same, just on a different scale. Their
That's
issue
right.
isn't
yep.
salary cap. Wait, let me finish. The real issue isn't salary cap tied to revenue. It's league-wide system of revenue sharing so all the teams can exist through good times and bad. In other words, what they're saying is, if they lump everything together, some teams are going to have good years, some teams are going to have bad years. And if they lump it all together and share that lumped sum, then everything will be fine and we can get our share and everybody can be happy. Is that a fair interpretation? No, but Manasseh, what I'm asking is, please, I'm asking, is that what they're saying? Did I just, like, put it in a nutshell
right,
or
no? I'm not, it's not what you're saying. It's just I'm amazed how they're trying to portray things like, oh, yeah, that's yeah, we just want to share and we're willing to take
so
a
So you agree about how
BS.
I interpreted it?
They're totally
So now I'm
so
asking
full
a question.
Of it, it's not even funny, man.
Okay. So you feel
just,
go ahead. Comment on their
I'm
like I was
say,
just trying I'm just
for,
trying to
for
help.
Somebody like Bruce or John or Frank, any fan of an Eastern team, especially Bruce, it's so disingenuous to take any the player's side when you wouldn't even have a team if it wasn't for Bob Young. Toronto wouldn't
No, like
exist
I said, you didn't
David
listen
Braves.
To me, man. Before Bob Young came in, man, that lady put him in cat's claws. If it wasn't for that group of Hamilton people, the Ticats wouldn't have been here 15 years ago. All right?
Yeah,
I know Bob Young
that
every year.
Young.
Bob
That's
Young lost millions of dollars. Wham,
yeah.
wham, wham. I'm sick of hearing about Bob Young losing. If he
every
didn't want to lose that money, he should have sold the team then.
Oh
right? But
God.
He didn't
you know,
because
you know why
he loves football.
Okay. Perfect example. Let me ask you, why did Ottawa fold twice? Can any of you guys tell me why?
I didn't follow Ottawa, so I can't answer that.
Okay.
Crazy ownership.
Everyone says,
dummies.
Exactly.
Dummy
that's what everybody says, bad ownership, right? That's their excuse.
Yeah.
The reality is they were losing money just like Toronto and Hamilton and Montreal were losing money. All four of the Eastern teams have been losing money. The only difference is there wasn't a guy willing to step forward and to keep paying the loss every year like you have Wenhall, Brayley, and Young were doing. That's
but
why
should the players have to sacrifice one other person's sacrifice?
Manasseh,
because there wouldn't be a team otherwise, and there wouldn't be a job.
Okay.
The whole point is
Manasseh.
No one.
But there is a team,
you,
and there is
you're
a
not
job.
Gonna have
that's
a job,
different.
Man. That's...
Okay, can we stay on point, guys? Manasseh, can I ask you a question? And seriously, like, can I ask you a question? And here's my question. Do you think the new owners would have come in without a new stadium?
For what team?
Ottawa. I'm still on,
Ottawa,
I'm
no.
listening to what you're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah, they came in because they knew this TV deal was coming in. I mean, they privately financed it.
And they were getting a new stadium. The stadium
that they paid the lion's share for. That's
but don't you think the stadium, the new stadium, had something to do with them coming in?
Well,
that's
yeah,
the thing,
a
guys.
Separate,
is that
that's beside the point.
Of
the whole,
Jeff,
my point is
they,
the reason that
they,
Toronto and Hamilton didn't fold like Ottawa is because they had an owner who was willing to cover the cost. That's
okay.
why I'm saying Bruce is disingenuous.
Okay, gotcha,
because
gotcha,
his
gotcha.
Team
Not
wouldn't
hey,
exist if
how
it wasn't
about,
for him.
How
they
about you, Kelly? Let give Kelly a chance. Kelly,
but
please.
But get this. Jeff Hunt had that foresight 7 years ago to say this TV deal is coming up. That's exactly what the players are trying to do. They're trying to capitalize on what they know about how this league is scaling. Like Frank has said, we're all the same. This league is scaling right now, and the players do not want to get left behind. I can't believe
you
would make any assertion about the players other than they want their share. And that's what it is.
They
and,
are
and,
scaling.
And Kelly, answer my question. Do you think that Mr. Hunt and company would have asked to be part of this league if they didn't have a new stadium in the works?
No way.
Exactly. Exactly
no way.
My point. Exactly my
Not
point.
Not a chance.
And,
oh, my
and,
God.
And,
Frank, you can't be...
No, come
what
on.
What kind of logic is that, man? That's,
what do you
that
mean, what
that
kind
has
of
no
logic?
Common
is
sense.
A business. What, exactly.
My point was
sense.
They fold. Ottawa folded because no one was willing to pay the price to keep them alive.
But,
that's
but
my point.
To make it
someone
attractive,
was willing to keep Toronto alive and
you.
Willing to keep Hamilton.
He's not saying he doesn't agree with you, but that was back then.
You.
This is now.
And,
this
and
is
now.
We're talking
and
nowadays.
Now what makes Hunt feel it's an if he wouldn't have gotten the promises of a new stadium, he would not have jumped in. He would not have jumped in. I'm
of course
saying
not,
that's
because
it would
have been a bad business. That's exactly. That's my point.
That's what he's been
trying.
So
no one is
going to
invest in the CFL if they don't think it's worth
for
making
the
money.
Stadium, Manasseh, who's paying for the stadium? Is it Mr. Hunt?
They're paying up like 60% of the cost. It's like $100 million. For the stadium renovation,
okay.
So they paid like $60 million out of that. And then
whatever
the rest
it
is from the
he's getting help,
yeah.
right? So as part of his business plan, he's
yep.
saying, I could stomach putting in 60%, but I ain't putting no 100% in. Right? Isn't that a
of
fair statement?
Not, right.
There you
yeah.
go. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's good. It's good that a businessman says, hey, look, dude, I want in, but there are certain conditions that put me in. You know, and good for him. He established the ground floor of his investment or the ceiling of his investment, and he said, that's all I'm going to spend. You guys are going to have to come in, Mr. Ontario, Mr. Canada, whatever, whoever the person that funded the stadium changes and all these changes, has decided that it's worth their investment to do such a thing. Great. He put it together. Me, I can sit here and be a Bob McCowan who says, you know, any money that's spent by the government is wrong. I could say that. But the CFL isn't anything. CFL is very important to the Canadian fabric that is Canadian. And when it comes to sports, the CFL is the league that expresses Canadiana more than anything. So, yeah, governments are going to support them. And I'm glad they did, which takes us back to what he said. The commissioner's argument that we cannot compare ourselves to other major league professional sports is not true. We are all the same, just at a different scale. Their issue isn't a salary cap tied to revenue. It's a league-wide system of revenue sharing so all the teams can exist through good times and bad. So what they're saying is it possible that maybe it should be profit sharing? And if I'm hearing this right, I know I got Kelly on my side on this one. I know Manasseh probably I don't, and I'm not sure about Bruce. But the point is, if all the success that a league has is based on all the league, and for a year, whether it's Hamilton, Toronto, or Saskatchewan, or Winnipeg, or BC, that has to kick in more a percentage of their profits, not the money that comes in. Because I don't believe that the players have a right to ask for what the league has coming in. They have a right to discuss what's profitable. Can you at least agree with that, Manasseh?
Okay. Apparently you guys aren't aware of sports business as much as I thought. Okay, the NFL, what? The salary cap is tied into TV revenue. Each team gets about $140 million from the TV deal they spread out, right? So their salary cap is matched to that revenue. So whatever they get from the TV money, that's the player salary, right?
Nothing.
In the CFL, the previous deal, they were getting $15 million from the TSN. Each team was getting $1.9 million. Now with the additional revenue, they get 2.7 more, which makes it $4.6 million.
Gotcha.
Now when you take that number into account, the commissioner's offer of putting it 4.8 looks reasonable because now the $4.6 million that's coming from the TV money goes towards covering the player salaries. That's identical to the NFL model. And in the case of CFL, they're actually giving the players more than they're making from the TV money. That's my point. These guys are making an unreasonable offer, and they're trying to bankrupt the league.
Right.
I'm telling you the truth. Andrew Harris was on Winnipeg Radio, and he said it flat out.
It's just an offer. I mean, come back with something, CFL. Like, come on. Get on it.
Wow.
You got a week.
And who?
No,
I think it was you, Frank.
They're not
I think it was you, Frank. That
they're not willing to leave revenue sharing.
Okay,
that's
hang
the,
on.
That's the stumbling
block. Okay, Manasseh.
No,
let
This week is different. This week is different.
Now,
Wednesday is going to be a lot different.
2 days from now, things are going to change. Bruce,
I think it was you, Frank, that posted a link on the CFL Best about the interview the radio host did with Cohan, whatever you want to. Right, and he had some. I can't think of all the numbers off the top
Doesn't
of my
matter.
Head.
Doesn't matter.
But
it's the
he
point
said
that
about
we're
this 40 some odd million dollars that the CFL is now getting from the new TV contract. That only really 4% of that is going to go towards the players. Right now, I look at that.
Okay, you misrepresented that. I don't know how you come up with that kind of math.
Well, listen to the interview, right? And even Cohan, he agreed with this guy on the math. But he went back and he started talking Cohan stuff, and that's when I got disinterested again. Well, I'm sorry, I did, because he's so cocky when he does his interviews, man.
But it's so complicated. The situation is not easy to discern. It's not an easy situation.
It's not even a decision to make.
But that's why I'm trying not to get into the finer points of this conversation. I'm just trying to. We've gone over now, guys, and it's fine. All I'm trying to do here is discuss what the players are saying, how much is BS and how much is fact. That's all, from your personal perspective. You don't have to explain why. It's not important. I just want you to say in 10 or 15 seconds
why. I really
seconds,
haven't
why
heard much from the players. You know,
this
they
is
haven't
what,
blown
this
up Twitter,
why,
but all
why,
I've listened to is Cohan's side.
And
you know, I haven't
why,
gotten a chance to hear Marwan's interview
why,
yet.
But listen, this is why I brought this into the issue. It's exactly why I brought it. This is what the players are saying, and they very carefully wrote this up, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to make sure that what they said didn't come to bite them in the ass. And so this is what they said. So we talked about the league system, you know, the league revenue and blah, 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 blah. And they're saying that what they're trying to say is, and I'm saying I'm hoping to make it understandable for the people like Babin and Jesperson who aren't that, you know, who care about the inner workings of the league. The point is, they're saying that as a league, they make a profit. And 1 year, one team's going to make a lot of profit. The next year, another team's going to make profit. The 1 year, one team's going to not make so much, and the other team's going to make not so much. So what they should do, and in, this is my opinion, this is not even what the players are saying, I don't believe that, that sharing should be revenue sharing. It should be profit sharing. And within the profit sharing, there should be an accommodation for people who are spending money they shouldn't be spending, like the people that Manasseh have been talking about, right? But also that would require for them to take money out of the profit sharing. They would have to show how they're losing money and exactly how they're losing money so that they could get that money. Just like I, when I worked for my company, when I said, listen, I drove from here to here and it cost me this much. I traveled that far. Here's my receipt and here's my bill for you know, travel costs and all that kind of stuff. And I show it to the company and the company gives me the money because they got the paper that I'm committing to that's, you know, legally binding, believe it or not. And the owner should be entitled to that as well. It's not you can't say, I don't have to open my books, but I think I lost this much amount of money. And the inference is that I should be compensated for that money without showing your books. That's where I disagree. Unfortunately, Christopher's not here, and this is where I disagree with Manasseh. If you want credit for losing money, you should show how you've lost it. Sorry, that's
okay.
How I feel.
Great.
That's my opinion.
I totally agree, though. I totally agree.
We have three teams that are publicly owned, and we can look at their records. I looked at Winnipeg,
exactly.
Saskatchewan, Edmonton, right? Edmonton
right.
had a $1.9 million profit, and Winnipeg made $2.3 million, right?
Perfect.
But the
fantastic
thing, the reason you can't count Winnipeg's profit is they didn't have to pay their stadium this year. Their payments start next season. So they're actually still almost $2 million in the hole because they have to have $4.5 million to
pay. And
Manasseh,
what did
they make the year before that?
The year before that, they didn't. They made a $1 million profit because they had a down year.
But Manasseh, the point is, to arrive at an agreement that is mutually acceptable, I'm saying, the players are just saying, and if they're not saying it, I'm going to say it for them, and I'm going to hold their hands to the fire. Show me where you have debt. Prove to me you have debt, and we will accommodate that debt within the profit sharing. Therefore,
right, exactly. And that's
yeah,
why
I'm
your
good
statement,
with that.
Frank, it's that's untrue what you just said. And you
what
know how
I
know
say?
This? For those who want to know the player's position, it's not profit sharing, it's revenue sharing. Go
absolutely
to TSN's website.
But that's not
they
their,
have, they
that's
have the
not,
players'
I'm talking
press
my
conference.
Opinion. Now,
right,
let's
but
be
I'm,
clear
what,
here. Manasseh.
There's no
I'm not
profit
playing
to share
games here.
For them
I'm not playing
that.
Games here. I'm being dead straight here with you. What I'm saying is if the players want to ignore losses by the CFL, they don't have an ally in me. Do you understand what I'm saying? Am I making
Kenny,
it clear enough
that.
For you?
Kenny,
okay.
I'm not talking about you, Frank.
But hear what
I just want anybody listening to be clear on the facts. So there's a lot of misrepresenting going on. And there's a lot of wording
that's being
done.
I don't care what everybody else is saying. We're talking about what we're... But Manasseh, stick to what we're saying. I don't care what everybody else is saying. I'm using what the players' statement of facts is saying, and I'm trying to put a spin on it that I can live with. You feel me? I just want
right.
you to understand what I can live with. Here's what I can live with as a CFL fan. If the players are saying, and again, I repeat, we said one thing. The player salaries are the only regulated form of spending on the teams, which means basically, hey, you guys have a bigger responsibility than just cutting our salaries. And I agree with them on that. That's my opinion. The commissioner's argument that we cannot compare ourselves to other major league sports, this is a red freaking herring. It doesn't matter. We're not talking about other leagues. We're talking about the CFL. If the CFL makes a profit, the players have a right to share in that. Do you or do you not agree with that?
Absolutely not.
I agree
you
with
don't?
That. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's like stock. The more money the company makes, the higher stock you're going to have.
Right. I would agree with it if every
marketing.
Team was making a profit. Like, the only
okay,
team that's
first,
making
first
that much
Manasseh,
profit is the
first
yeah, but
Manasseh,
that, see, that's where, see, that's where,
okay.
Frank, can I talk for a minute? That's where
okay,
I disagree with you.
Okay.
Because you say, Frank, that the team should go on like a profit-sharing sort of deal, right? Kind of, sort
mm-hmm.
of? Okay, now, if that's what you're saying, if depending on how much profit that team made, you split it up among the players equally, right?
Well, whatever the percentage
that
they
yeah.
agree to.
Right. Okay. Now, I have this question for you. Would your profit sharing include merchandise that is sold throughout the team?
Again, that's a negotiable item. See, here's where I call...
The reason why I brought that into equation is because how many Fan 2's jerseys do they sell in a year, and how many rookie, like guys
yeah,
that
yeah,
are
no,
second
no.
string?
I get you.
Right?
What you're
basically and therefore,
saying...
those players that sell more jerseys should make more profit out of your final profit, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, the part
yes.
that you miss, Bruce, in that equation is the money it costs to make the jerseys. Like, you take the writers,
no,
right? The writers generate
profit.
More than $20 million
see, Manasseh,
a year.
Forget it,
Manasseh. Because you don't know the math, man.
No, I'm
amazed that you guys aren't.
I'm saying if Henry Bruce sells 100 jerseys with his name on it,
yeah,
and Javon Walker sold one jersey on it, who should get more money?
Right, they
obviously
have that.
Obviously, Fan 2's because he sold more
right.
jerseys.
Right.
Right,
but you're not factoring the cost it takes to make the item. The writers generate $23 million.
And they charge you $200.
Bruce,
man,
Bruce.
Dude,
Bruce,
you do not know the math, man.
Can I be a bridge? Can I be a bridge between you and Manasseh? Bruce, what Manasseh is trying to...
It's not a bridge, man. It's ignorant conjecture. You guys
no,
have
no,
to
no,
make...
No,
if you're not
don't
making your opinion
ignorant
on that...
because I have a difference
positive
in an
language.
Opinion.
Use positive language.
I haven't called you ignorant yet. Come on, man. We
okay.
have a difference in opinion.
Now, like I said, we have a difference of opinion. And Manasseh, allow me to give it a shot here to help Bruce and you to create... I want to create a bridge between you two. And here's my bridge. I think that Bruce would be happy if there's a profit because a player puts his name on the back of a jersey, his name on the back of a jersey. What Bruce is saying, and by the way, Bruce, I don't agree with this, but what Bruce is saying is that if there's a profit created by the use of that guy's name, that guy has a right to that money, a share of it at least. That's all Bruce is saying. And you have a problem with that?
Yes, man, because you guys don't understand the business model. If the player is
not
invested in the cost to make the item...
I don't understand the position where the businessman who makes no contribution to the actual game, all right? A guy like Bob Young, you know, I'm sorry, Manasseh, this is you. I've been told how I don't understand business and I want to understand stuff. But here's what you don't understand and what Christopher Jones doesn't understand, and too bad he's not here. What you guys don't understand is I put Fan 2's on the back of a jersey, it going to sell. I put Bob Young on the jersey, not so much.
That is, I mean, okay. I'm not
what?
Even going to address
that's not
that
a fact?
Because that is, that,
what,
I mean,
what's
I'm
wrong
sorry,
with that
Frank.
Statement? What's
I'm not
wrong
even
going to
go
statement?
There. I'm just going to
exactly.
give you an clear point. And Kelly's going to know this too. The writers generate $23 million in merchandise sales. Out of that $23 million, how much of that do you think is profit? Like $3 or $4 million. Why? Because it costs $19 to $20 million to generate it.
And they should
go
only
look at
the
numbers. The
players should only share.
That's the problem. The players are not
that.
Paying to make the items. Therefore, they're not making the investment. That's my point, man. If they're not
so
going to
they
share
should,
in the cost,
so they should
you
share
can't
in
just
it.
Share in the profits only and not make any investment whatsoever. That's how
oh,
business
I see.
Works.
Okay.
That's my
I
point.
Guess.
That's why they're
welcome.
Not partners.
Welcome.
They're employees.
They're making the investment by
welcome
putting their
the
life on
the
line every time they step on that field.
There you go, and that's my point. That's why
the NFL,
if you're
though,
not if you don't base your opinion on facts and numbers and just on your opinion and your love for the team, that's not how we do business. We're not talking about your fans.
Whoa.
So put that in the closet. We're talking about the success of the CFL going forward. In
have
the
you
future.
Not heard?
And this
have
is a viable
you not heard?
League.
Excuse me.
I mean that's
Manasseh.
Crazy, man. I'm
Manasseh,
sorry.
You, have you not heard?
I can't help it because I keep
you want
hearing
to talk
this,
about
this
business?
Stuff from people.
You want to talk about business? Proprietary rights and likeness control. What is that about? Tell me what that's
okay,
about.
Okay, they have that in the NFL too. And in the NFL, they give players like 5% of the profit
whatever
from their
is.
Jersey sales.
Whatever it is, don't deny it the players.
It's a minuscule amount, man. It's not even
who cares?
That much.
Maybe it's a minuscule amount that is a big number for the players. And give it to them because they deserve it.
I like to have 5% of what
the
NFL makes.
You guys are talking about deserve. Like, you guys say these things as if the owners
but
are not
dude,
making a
but,
sacrifice.
But really, seriously, Manasseh. Seriously,
this
Manasseh.
This is not how the real world
there
works,
there is
man.
A law. There is a law where you have proprietary rights for your name. You have proprietary, you know, in the National Hockey League, the Players Association gets all the money for the players to put their names on the back. When fans buy a jersey that says Kessel on it, Kessel and the NHLPA makes money. And why do you think that's not fair? You think you have a free opportunity to make profit on other people?
Because they sign a contract that in the wording it addresses those things as far as appearances, as far as billboards, and they
that ain't right.
That
they, in my opinion,
no
that is
option.
Not right. In my opinion,
who cares about
not
it being right.
right
or not? This is flat out bullshit.
I do.
If they don't like the terms,
I care
don't
about
sign
right
the
wrong.
Contract.
I'm not a businessman. I happen to believe that right and wrong means something. I'm just an ordinary human being.
Not when it comes to making money, man. That kind of stuff has no play. And when it comes to business,
gotcha.
It's either you, if you don't invest in it, you don't have enough say. It's based on your investment, determines your percentage of the ownership of the business to make a call, man.
I gotcha. Hey, listen.
Like you own a business, don't you, Frank? You have your own, company,
and
right?
That's cool. Our initial monetary proposal would still allow for the distribution of an additional $1 million per club. Okay, I don't understand that one, but that one the players said, cool. The standard set by other North American sports leagues is the salary cap is approximately 50% of the total gross revenue. Our initial ask is 25.7% of Winnipeg's revenue, 33.6% of Edmonton's revenue, and 18% of Saskatchewan's revenue.
You see that it was all revenue, not profit. So
yeah, exactly. And
right
I agree with you. Manasseh, I agree with you. I don't like the revenue term. The revenue term, see, the players are going to have to get off that. They're going to have to get off the revenue stream situation because there's just too much debt in the CFL because of too many dedicated owners to the CFL, like Braley, right?
Like Bob Young. He's dedicated.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
And I don't think Bruce...
And I never meant to put
Bob
Young down at all. It's just that, you know, I was just getting tired of reading it's all about the owner and how much they've sacrificed. Well, other people sacrifice too, man.
Yeah, that's all we're saying here. That's all we're saying. We're saying here, I mean, nobody's saying that Bob Young doesn't deserve consideration. Nobody's saying that Bob Young...
He deserves all of the consideration, because without him, there wouldn't be a Hamilton to talk about.
All the consideration is not right. All the consideration is not right, in my opinion. I'm unfortunately a guy who loves the little guy. And I love the guy that's going to lose the argument, usually, down the road. I like to think I side with the little guy who's going to lose his argument. Fortunately, in the CFL, I can actually look at players and go, they're the little guy, because they actually are. They're the little guy in this one. And I support them because of that. It's just my failing as a human being, okay? And Manasseh, I respect what you're saying is that the owners take the most risk, right? That's what you're saying, right?
I'm saying if your allegiance has to be to your team and to your league more than
I don't
to
care
player,
about that. We're
that
not talking about allegiances. We're talking about common sense.
I'll just ask you
common
a simple
sense,
question. Then,
your
Frank,
common
do
sense
you,
says, go ahead.
Do you want a 10th team, for example? And do you want the CFL to continue
don't
to grow?
Don't blackmail me.
Or do you
don't
want it to stay
me,
where it
that
is?
That pisses me off. Don't blackmail me because that ticks me off.
No, that's
that
a legitimate answer because that,
no,
that should determine whose side you take in this. In
well,
this
I'll
issue.
Answer that. I like to see 12 teams in. I like
exactly.
to see one
so
in each province and
if
man
that's
man
what
each.
You want, then you have to take the owner's side because
why?
Nobody's going to invest in a bad business model where you're going to lose money out the gate. Who in their right mind would be willing
how
to pay?
How can profit sharing be a bad business model?
Because it undercuts you before you get in. You already know these guys
no,
are
no.
making an additional $2 million more than
they
should
I
be
said.
Getting.
I want to repeat this again for the listeners who are still here who don't like this who like this kind of conversation. How does profit sharing limit ownership's ability to profit?
Okay. If a new ownership step forward, let's say in Halifax or in Quebec City, and they come in order to get a stadium, they're obviously going to have to invest a certain amount of money. It could be 20, it could be 30, it could be more. But it's going to be several millions of dollars on their part in order
gotcha.
To get it done because the province is not going to pay the whole thing, neither the federal government. So that means I'm putting in that much money. Okay. Then I have to pay the league at least $8 million to get in to pay the franchise fee. So I'm already, let's say I'm in the hole $20 to $30 million out
gotcha.
The game to start
I feel
with,
you.
Okay? So if I do I want a business that I know can make at least $1 to $2 million a year
so I can
recoup my money. Otherwise, why would I go through the trouble?
But what if in the formula of the profit sharing, those revenues are considered as basically a responsibility of both parties, being the players and the owners, all right? So therefore, those monies have to be deducted from the profit. And in the case of like I said before, in the case of the that new team, the profit, they get thrown in, the negatives get thrown into the full scope of profit margin for the whole league. And then you go in the whole league, that becomes a negative. That becomes something you subtract. Bruce, am I explaining your position accurately? Where then the owners have the ability to deduct those costs away from the profit, and the players still only get a percentage of the profit after those negative considerations are put on the table and or confirmed. Am I right, Bruce? Am I on the same page with you?
Half and half.
I'm
not too sure because I'm getting confused with all the numbers. But that's
well, put
not,
it this way,
new.
Bruce, let me make it simple. You and I are in business together, right? We're the owners, the players, and you and I are in business together. And I have expenses that I'm spending, in this case, on behalf of a new team. These expenses should be taken away from the profit, right? Because the profit has to pay for those expenses, yes or no?
That's right. Yes.
Right?
100%. Yes.
So now, you know, it gets lost in all the profits that Saskatchewan has, that Winnipeg has. And if those losses don't overcome the profits of Edmonton, you know, Saskatchewan,
then you have
Winnipeg.
To put
it extra? Well, no, then there is the profit is less, right? And so the players share less, right?
Throughout the whole league.
Yes.
Right. But
so
I don't
what
necessarily
we're saying is how much
agree
does
with,
the league,
with the...
How much does the league profit? You take away the deficits, like the deficit of a new team coming in, the cost of a new stadium, and the players only share on what the league makes for everybody.
Everybody combined.
exactly.
Okay, so
I disagree with that. Like, if I was to open up, take Tim Hortons, for example. You have one on every street corner in Hamilton. Okay, if my Tim Hortons on a Gage in Ottawa makes $100,000 a year, and the one on Gage and Fennel only makes $75,000 a year, are you telling me that I should be able to give up some of my profit because they never made as much as me? Maybe they sucked.
Yes,
yeah, that's
I
the
agree.
Point.
But that's what the league has to handle. That's the league's responsibility, not the player's responsibility.
Okay.
But the
players
should
get
money.
I think the players should get a certain percentage on how much their own team makes.
We're way over. Can we at least agree on the players should not be able to share in anything but profit? They shouldn't share in income. They should only share in profit. And what I'm saying is, here tonight, is they should share on an agreed amount. Whether it's 35%, whether it's 25%, or 40%, or 50% of the profit, that's all they should share. If the league loses money, then there should be a floor for the players to at least a basic amount of money that they need to survive. And profit can go wherever it goes. And if both the players and the owners work hard to make the league a better place, they both should profit from it. That's my question.
Yep.
That's my belief.
Great point, but the problem that doesn't apply in practically, let's say we did have 10 teams. The players want a cap that's going to be $6.2 million now and will be $7 million by the end of the CBA. So that would be about $70 million in player salaries. The problem is you don't have enough profits to meet that number.
Well,
that's
then
the issue.
They shouldn't expect that money. In my opinion, they shouldn't expect that money. No. See, I'm neither a socialist or a capitalist. I'm a realist. And as a realist, I say to myself and say to others, if you can't put together enough interest in making X amount of money, you can't split anything other than X amount of money. Whatever the money is that you guys generate, that's what you should split. The owners and the players cannot play this game. It's got to stop. It's got to stop. The league either makes money or doesn't make money. If it makes money, the players should share in that profit. The owner should not be responsible for debt. alone. The players should share in debt as well. And by saying that, what I'm saying is, if new teams come in, like you said, Manasseh, or new teams like the Red Blacks are coming in, and they've got a new stadium and there's a cost attached, then that new stadium benefits both the players and the owners. Agreed?
Okay. Well,
right?
if that holds
so
true,
all I'm saying
if
is
that holds
that,
true, what about in, okay. So
go ahead.
The problem, again, Frank, with that model is that all the teams that do have profits, Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, everyone, they come right away to mind because those are the most money-making
gotcha.
Teams.
Gotcha.
The problem is, right, Saskatchewan, with all the money they make, they have to now pay $25 million towards their stadium. And on top of that, they have another $40 million facility fee that comes
deduction,
along with it.
And that's a deduction, that's a legitimate deduction that can be made
yeah.
on behalf of ownership and deny the players that money. The players cannot, a player's not going to come to me and say, well, you know, the team bought a new stadium, they put together, that's not our problem. No, it is your problem. It's the player's problem. New stadiums
right.
and the cost of having those stadiums is the player's problem. That's why I'm trying to make this as simple as I possibly can, and I don't see why people don't see it. In my opinion, sports is not like a regular business. It's different. It's different. And in that difference, because the government supports a lot of what sports finances, you know, are, then we have to take, once the government's involved, once the people are involved, we have to look at this as a whole different kettle of fish. Whatever the owners pay, like if Braley legitimately loses $10 million a year or $20 million a year, just show me how you're losing it and how it affects your bottom line, and you will be not compensated, but the factor of that will be included in what the players get. And if the players don't like the fact that they feel they don't have any concerns with cost, then they can go take a flying leap. Because, see, I'm not behind the players. I'm behind the game. I'm behind the league. I'm
yeah.
behind the
okay,
existence
I got a question to that. If,
go ahead.
If I'm a business and I tell my employees that and they come back with, how can I put this?
Go ahead, try.
The players are paid to
take
do their job, which is to what?
Right. Play football.
The players are paid to do a job. What is that?
Play football.
That's right. The owners hire personnel to do what? Like
to maintain the players and to make them the best they can be, because that affects their bottom line. Because we all agree, I think, that the better
team
plays.
I'm not talking about coaches.
But we're talking about the support staff. You're talking about the support staff.
Yeah, like
staff.
The president and the,
yeah,
and the
yeah,
sales
yeah, yeah.
marketing
the support
people
staff.
And all that.
Yeah.
Their
job is to promote
the
team, right?
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so if they do a shitty job, or we're still on the air, aren't we? If they do a poorly job on selling that team, and the players mm-hmm. are out there busting their cojones, still doing their job, then why should the players have to suffer because the management decided to hire management
you,
that couldn't
do you
manage
want that, Manasseh, first? Because
yeah,
I want to talk
I'll
on that point. Go ahead.
That goes in two ways. But first of all, we need to make a very clear thing. We have to understand the CFL. Three of your teams are publicly owned, which means they're a non-profit organization. So all the money that Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, and Edmonton make, they take that money, they reinvest it back into the team. That's why Edmonton had $150 million in renovations at Commonwealth Stadium. Winnipeg paid about $85 million towards their stadium, and Saskatchewan now is going to put another $25 million to theirs. That's the reason they could afford to have that type of money in their facilities, because they're non-for-profit. So now when we address the profit teams, the privately owned teams like a regular business, that's BC, Calgary, and then your Eastern teams. Right?
Right.
So
right.
only two of them, only BC and Calgary, Bruce, are actually generating a profit. All the Eastern teams are losing money. Montreal only broke even 2 years, 2010 and 2011 or 12. That's it. Every other year they've been losing money. So that's the landscape we're looking at. That's why I want to make everyone clear. Then when we go from there, if you work in a factory and the factory goes out of business or they lose money and they close, all the employees get laid off or fired. They get let go. Because there's no longer a job there. So that's my point. If the players want a job, it would behoove them to want their company to be making more money so that the company can exist. Otherwise,
I realize
the company
that, but if you're spending money on people that can't do the job, then that's your problem. That's not the player's
exactly.
problem.
Exactly. See, Bruce, that's the thing is people. That's not the issue. It's not them doing their jobs because people in Hamilton and Toronto and Montreal, they work hard. The problem is they're just there in markets that just don't love football the same way people in the West do. In the West, football is part of the culture. So they don't even have to try that hard to sell tickets or get people to buy merchandise. But in the East, like Frank and John talk about, especially in Ontario, it's an uphill battle. The people in Toronto, they work their tails off, but they only can do so much. And they're competing with so much more. So they have a completely different business model. That's why the commissioner is so adamant that the league needs to hold on to this TV money so that they can help these Eastern teams. Because those Eastern teams need more money to advertise. They need more money to market. They have to break even. You see, that's why I'm so passionate behind the owners, because I want the league to grow. I don't want the league to get stuck and start to go backwards again, back to what it was in the 90s. And that's when we had revenue sharing in the 90s, and you had all these teams going bankrupt, all these telethons. I'm not trying to see that again. I know where the CFL can go, and this TV deal is the first step. I want the players to make more money, but it has to be reasonable, man.
Absolutely.
And when you look at all the facts, and you'll understand why I'm behind the owners. There's no other way.
I get why you're behind the owners. But
tell the CFL to
tell
me off with that.
If you really want to be reasonable, do you or do you not agree that regardless of the name on the back or the logo on the front, the game is about the play, what happens on the field, yes or no? Do you at least agree with that? Okay. So having said that, the players have an impact on how sellable the league is. And I don't like this revenue-sharing thing either. But I do understand why the players say this revenue sharing thing has to be part of the formula, because some teams aren't very efficient or they're wasteful and they're stupid or whatever. I shouldn't say that. That's not nice. But regardless, they're not economically viable. They waste. They're wasteful and stuff like that. And why should the players be punished for the wastefulness of owners? Okay, fair enough. But I don't agree with them on that score. What I agree with is that once you determine that the players and the owners are partners, and rather than get involved with all the bull loney, and talk about this guy has two coaches, that guy has three coaches, once the organizations that are the teams and the players get together and say, look, how much of the profit should we each get? We work together to create a profit. This is a part that bothers me, is that they're their best friends. Each other, they can help each other so much, the players and the owners, if they work together and profit together. So you say, okay, owners, you get 51%, the players get 49% of the profit. Then for everybody to make more money, the idiots have to be jettisoned. Would you at least agree with that? If they were all profiting in a whatever they agree that is, right?
Agree. Yeah, I would if they were partners. Again,
but they're not partners,
Frank.
But they should be. They have to be.
Right.
There's no doubt about it.
So Bruce and John, you guys both work. Or Frank, you guys both work at a job for a company, right?
I had a business too.
Okay, but Bruce, you work for like you have a job, right?
I have. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't right now, but that's the difference.
You'll understand my question then, right? Okay, so when you guys were working for a business, did you guys consider yourselves partners with the owner?
Depends what I'll give you two examples of that. I've worked factory work where you get paid by the hour and you go home.
Perfect.
And I've had jobs where there's profit sharing. Canadian Tire, for example.
Great.
So it all depends on the company that you work for. Whether or not.
Okay, but
and what you what
so let's say you're
you
working
have.
A factory job or
you
know just any labor job, and they say they have a union, right? And you come on and you have agreed upon salary beforehand, because that's what the players have, right? They have contracts and they agree on a amount they're going to get paid beforehand, like a regular job, like a
factory.
Yeah,
then they renegotiate.
Right,
that's right.
Then they renegotate.
The point is that
there's renegotiation.
Of course.
You can't
but the point
sign
is
a contract
they sign a contract.
And expect it to last you the whole 25 years you work at your job either.
No, I know, but you know what I mean by that. Let's just be practical.
Yeah.
Like a partner, for example, would be like at the Canadian Tire or someone who has a sales job, and they say, for every item you sell, we give you X amount of percentage of that. Those people are getting commissions. They're not getting paid salaries. That's different. They're
getting
football
both,
players
obviously.
Are factory. They're the equivalent of a factory employee who comes to work. He agreed upon his salary, and then from that point on, his job, regardless of what happens, he has to do his job, and he has an agreed upon amount he's going to get. Period.
Gotcha.
That makes him an employee. He's no longer a partner. A partner
right.
is someone who comes in and says, you're investing $10 million, I'm going to invest $10 million, or I'm going to invest $5 million, and I'm going to have a certain percentage of the thing will belong to me.
But just because the owners, listen, Manasseh, just because the owners can't make the contribution in previous effort, which, like, for you to suggest that the players have no, they make no contribution to the partnership is ludicrous. These guys spend a lifetime becoming football players. Owners do nothing but have money. They do is have money.
That's the same,
and you're
John,
putting
like,
you're
Frank.
Putting all the you're putting all the importance on the money they make or the money they
okay,
have.
Okay, so Frank, if
none
I'm going to be an engineer,
on the investment
if I'm an
the
engineer,
players make in their career.
Think about what you're saying, Frank, in real life. If I'm an engineer,
I am.
Go to years of school.
I was.
Right, so you know this.
When I was, I'm going to tell you. You asked him a question. Now I'm going to answer your question. Give me a chance to answer your question. As a young lad, under 12 years old, I worked with my father fixing boats. We fixed boats, okay, and for RCYC, big thing here. And I learned that. I learned how to be a carpenter, cabinet maker, blah, 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 blah. And I went from leaving him at the age of 30, okay, and I tripled my income after I left him. Why?
Okay.
Because I had the ability to do something. I went from being a worker to a supervisor, to a manager, to giving a company a contribution of ability, okay, and my knowledge, and they paid me accordingly. They paid me what was a rate that I could get elsewhere, okay?
Okay.
Now, that's why I say it's not fair for you to judge football players, because there aren't or isn't an elsewhere. It's the CFL or the NFL or the you know indoor football league and yada yada yada.
Right.
But still, I
That's
made a contribution.
Us,
I made triple. I increased my income by triple. By triple.
Yeah.
I tripled my income. Okay, in a matter of 10 years. Why? Because I put myself on the open market, and my value became clear to me.
It was determined by the market.
To me. Yeah, to me.
Right. It's
I said,
the same
you know
like
what?
The players.
I can hold
when they
out
go to free agency, they do
so
the same
right
thing.
So right now, the players are saying the same thing. They're holding out for something, whatever that is. The owners have to make a decision. They can't play football. So in my opinion, you're overrating the importance of the owners. There are lots of owners that have started leagues everywhere. You yourself have decided to comment here on this program about the other leagues that have existed and have gone into the toilet. The reason they went into the toilet wasn't just because of ownership, it was also because of players. So let's stop screwing around here and stop playing games, and let's be honest.
Well, it wasn't players, Frank, because there's a lot
players
of players from the UFL that
finish.
Are in the CFL
let
now.
Let me finish. Both players and owners, you need a combination of the two that will satisfy the needs of Bruce John Inch, Manasseh Gibran-Medin, Frank Stanish,
in the seats, in the
Mike
seats
Townsend,
to what pays you.
Everybody. And if you
right.
think it's only the owners that are the reason for the fans being in the seats, you are delusional. I am not
delusional.
Well,
it's not the players. It's the fans that the league exists. Let's get it real. It's the fans that are the real heroes, not the players.
That's right.
I'm not
we,
talking
go to
about
see,
heroes.
We go to see our favorite players.
Right.
And our favorite team, of course. But,
yeah, because,
you know,
Frank, look at the UFL in America. The UFL came up. They put all this money into it. A lot of the players that were starting on UFL teams are starting in the CFL.
You've been talking
what
about
did
how
the UFL not have?
But you've
right,
been talking about how important
have
it is for the owners that put money into the CFL. You just said yourself right now it's meaningless. Without the
no,
players, without the game, it's
that's
meaningless.
That's my point. The players didn't contribute anything. Most of the UFL players
did.
Are in
they
the CFL
do.
Now.
They do every
it's
day.
It's the fans, Frank.
Every Burris
it's the fans that make the CFL.
To the league.
It's not the players.
It is the players. Stop.
Frank,
because
it's the owners
laundry,
and it's
this,
the fans.
Chris,
the players are irrelevant in the discussion. They're just employees.
This Christopher Jones laundry is insulting. I mean, if I were a player, I'd be
you know.
– I would be totally insulted that you would refer to me
right.
as
that's
a
that's not a right
Vaughn.
Statement to make. Right.
That's pretty
I got
sad.
That. But
no,
I'm just
I
saying,
hope so. I
okay,
hope
but Frank,
so.
Just think
are
about
human
the logic
beings.
Here.
These
if
are
the UFL,
it is logic.
If the UFL had the same players as the CFL, almost all of them. Drew Willey was a starting quarterback in the UFL.
It wouldn't have
just
worked.
Giving an example.
It wouldn't have
my,
worked.
My point is that they had the players, and they had the owners. They didn't have the fans. That's the
right.
whole point. The players are relevant. You
so
need the owners, to make the investment.
So why don't the owners respect the fans? Well, whether you like a player after he leaves your team or not isn't the point. For now, Bruce John Inch is a Hamilton Tiger Cat fan, and he loves all his Hamilton Tiger Cats. For now,
well, even,
Frank Sinich loves
let's
all
talk,
his
let's
Argos.
Talk, let's not talk Hamilton. Let's talk Montreal even, with Ocho Reyes, whatever you want to pronounce his name, coming in. How many more fans are going to go to a game because of him being on that team? Not because of the owner, not because of what the
yeah,
owner
that's,
does.
Okay, great
because of that
Bruce,
new guy
that's
coming in
right.
that has the big name.
It's just one of few guys, though. That really
no, it's not.
Yeah,
no,
fun.
It's not, man. I, you know what?
Very rare. Like,
as being,
like
a,
Ricky
being,
Williams
a, being a loyal Hamilton
Ticat
fan, I much
care.
Who even if Henry Burris gets a touchdown in a game, who's going to be, who on Monday morning, whose jersey are they going to buy? Henry Bruce. They're not going to buy a Bob Young jersey, just like Frank said. They're going to be.
Of course not. I mean, come on, man. That's
what,
like
what
not
do you mean,
even.
Of course not? Then
yeah, but
you say
can't,
the players
you can't
have,
you're
telling
no
us the
Bob
players have no contribution.
Not it's not
okay,
fair.
That's,
we're
that's
doubling
not
up
to
on
Bob Young
it's
when
not
you
fair.
Say that. No, it's not about doubling up. I understand.
No,
where
I just
you guys
feel like I'm doubling
up.
Like the fact that Bruce and I are on the same side and you're on your own, that's not fair.
Okay.
Oh,
it's not about
that's
okay.
I got to take my dog out anyway, man. He's been
yeah,
looking
no,
at
listen,
me for
let's
over
call
an hour.
It a night. And
but,
Manasseh,
hey, man, it's
all...
been a great, great show, man. You know,
well,
you can come over to my house anytime, Manasseh, when you're in town. You know that.
Yeah, same here, buddy. Yeah, total respect.
No,
man,
man
just
because we have differences of opinions, man. We love each
yeah,
other.
Definitely.
Just like whatever, man. That's life. Life would be boring, man, if we all thought the same, dude.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely
and
would, man.
I'd be scared to death
but,
if I thought the same as you two.
What's that?
I said I'd be scared to death if I thought the same way you two do.
thanks, Frank. We appreciate that.
That was a
absolutely,
joke.
Man.
That was
oh, yeah, it was a great
joke.
Show tonight, guys, and I
well,
look forward
listen,
to chatting it up
nice
with you on Friday.
And we ended up where we usually end up, which is disagreeing.
That's okay. Disagree to disagree.
Yeah,
yes,
or
sir.
Agree
it was,
to disagree.
It was a pleasure talking to you.
Hey,
Manasseh,
listen. Listen, just to clear this thing up, at the after we add everything up, the owners have a right to not lose money. The players don't have a right to ignore that the owners lose money. But the owners have to accept the fact that without the players, they got nothing. And that alone
and that,
requires
right.
them to discuss a share of profit that they work towards both. And if they both work towards it together, will be better for everybody. That's my point. That's
sorry,
all
Frank.
I want to say. But you
you're,
know what?
You're,
you can,
you're such a liberal, Frank. I love you, though. But it's all okay. You know, this is just a political
a
thing.
I'm
real, more conservative. You got
a
liberal thing. It's all
I'm
good. It's fine.
The reality
yeah.
is that we can do a lot more together than we can do apart. And you can look at that as corny or as being a liberal.
Come on,
but
Frank.
Really,
you know more than anybody. They could replace all of these guys tomorrow.
But that's not the like, point, my friend, because whether you replace them or not, the contract the CBA protects the players that are under contract
okay.
and that doesn't change and that's where you and I disagree
and if
I
you have enough that, money the owners can be replaced how's that
yeah well
yeah
if,
but
if,
okay
if the
so
league
Frank
makes
Frank
money,
you I just want to make one last point you love your 2012 Argos that won the 100th Grey Cup
oh
right?
they were
that
fantastic.
Team probably means more
I
right?
enjoyed it so much yes I did
perfect example. Where did all those guys on defense go? Ricky Foley, Brandon Isaac, Marcus Ball,
they
Robert
went,
McCune.
They
all of
went,
them are gone. Your entire
yeah, but that's
defense
because
is gone.
We had a
your defensive coach is gone.
Who thought he was a
half
hero
your offense is gone.
Yeah, but
yeah,
they brought
but
in new guys, here, Frank and Love.
But he was
you know?
Wrong.
Yeah, but that's
they
what I'm saying, Frank, is that
the
these guys,
year.
They come and go, but the Argos are always
but,
there.
But
the Ticats are always there. And they're
win.
The ones that matter
they
the most. It's the fans and the team. Forget the owners and the players. Those guys come and
no,
go like
a revolving
door. No, but
Manasseh, they didn't win. That is a management decision, which is why I don't 100%, you know, follow management's decisions, which includes ownership. They make bad decisions. And you know what? The players aren't in to making decisions. That's not what they do. The only decision they get to make is, here's their opportunity to negotiate. Here's the opportunity for the owners to negotiate with them. And what they arrive at will be fine for me. But I just want to make sure that we keep things in perspective, all right? And the perspective is this. The players will get whatever the owners are willing to give them. And if the owners are stupid enough to poison the well, that's their decision. If the players are stupid enough to poison the well, then they deserve what they get. Because I am neither a player supporter or an owner supporter. It's just right now the players are like a little less supported, so I find myself wanting to support them a little bit because I'm an underdog freak.
That's so if they go on strike, are you going to support them still? If they
I'm not supporting any of them. If they go on strike, understand this completely from me. I blame both. If they go on strike, I'm not one of those people who pick sides. I blame both. If they go on strike, if the players go on strike, or if the – well, we've already heard from the commissioner that he will not be locking the players out. Their intention is not to lock them out. They only are waiting for a walkout. If a walkout happens, that's the owners, then they get the opportunity to prove what you said, which is they're replaceable, and then we'll find out. And I'm not here rooting for one side or the other, Manasseh, at all. I'm not rooting for them getting to that point or what happens after that point. For me, it's shameful if it arrives at that point. That I guarantee you. How I'll feel beyond that, we'll have to wait till we get there. But for now,
we'll see what happens.
You guys are going to be on the owner's side because if they get replacement players, both of you guys are still going to support
That's not
going to
happen.
Well, I got no
but
choice.
But if they did.
That's a whole different show.
I paid
we'll discuss that maybe
tickets.
Friday.
Unless I'm given an option, which may or may not be one that legally I'll have, I don't know.
Okay.
We'll find out if that happens. Because I don't think I'm legally obligated. I think I can legally ask for a refund if they decide to go with... I don't know that, though, Manasseh. I really don't. I don't.
What if they did? Let's just say the players go on strike, they get replacement players, and the team say, we'll give you a refund on your season tickets.
I would take
the
refund.
Are both of you going to do that? You're taking the refund. Bruce, you're taking the refund?
As long as I'm guaranteed my season ticket the next year when the regular players come back.
Good point.
Oh, no.
Excellent.
Okay. Yeah,
that's
right. They might have me by the balls
me
and say,
you know,
unless you, that's like, that's, the, like, I'll give you another example. That's why, forget it. Yeah, but
no,
I like
no,
to know that. But if that's, if I'm guaranteed my same seat when the regular season comes back, then yeah, I wouldn't go. I want to refund.
If the business can't offer you what
why?
You bought.
I'm paying the same rate for mediocre
if they
players.
Ran out,
come on,
if they
man.
Ran out of whether it's anything, Bruce, you're right. If they run out of a product that you bought and you get to say, well, I'm not going to pay for it until it's available. And if it's available the next year, then you automatically are paying for it. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
That's
right?
Great. I respect that. That's good. Yeah. You guys are being consistent. I appreciate that. That's good.
No. It is what it is. I will not support the league. Not just the team, not just the players. I will not support a league that does it, that does what they don't need to do. That's
like selling me a T-shirt made of silk for $19.99, one in a month, and then next year you want to sell me one in wool for the same price. No, man, I'm paying for a silk shirt. I want
Bruce,
a silk
we're
shirt.
We're not prejudiced against wool,
that's a
right?
Great point,
we're not
Bruce.
Prejudiced against wool.
Oh,
we
no,
just
no,
bought,
we got to get
just,
that across.
We
no,
just wanted,
no, not
we,
at all.
We just want, we expected silk. That's all.
That's
we
right.
We want what we paid for.
You know?
Yeah.
And if that's
totally
taken
agree.
Away, then of course we want the opportunity to have our money back. And but like I
it
said, I want to
point.
Be in the same seat.
Make
but I know
point.
That's a good point, Frank. You know,
mm-hmm.
if they
yeah,
do bring
point.
In back in replacement seats, I think I'm obligated anyway.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
You know, but if I'm a normal fan without season tickets, then no, I wouldn't go.
There you go.
Okay.
That's my point. But anyway, guys, you guys have a great week, man.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll talk on Facebook and that.
Bruce, it was nice talking to you.
It was
and every
a great,
time I
great,
see a picture of
show.
You, you got to get a smaller helmet.
Well, you know what? They actually fit my head because they're so blown up with that air pressure stuff.
There you
but,
go.
but,
are you
yeah,
saying
I know,
your
it looks,
head's
it looks,
full of air?
Nah, some people say so.
Okay. Well, I'm
that's
not
okay.
one of Bruce, again,
a lot of things go in one ear and out the other with me.
There you
so
go.
You never know.
Hey, Bruce, really, I really appreciate your invitation. Even though I paid for the ticket, I'm really grateful for the opportunity to spend some time with your Hamilton Tiger Cat compadres. I really had a good time. I really appreciate it.
We had a good table, and everybody
yes,
got along.
Yes, we did. I'm sorry I had to leave early, but the boys, you know, Manasseh, you guys were all talking about wanting to talk about the strike. If it wasn't for that hot issue, I would have stayed and done the show from there. I think I could have done it. I don't know for sure that I would have succeeded, but
no,
I know
no,
I would.
No, I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you. No, it was good having you there, and Manasseh, always a pleasure, buddy, and you have
here.
A good week. And who
you
else
too,
do
sir.
We have on? Everybody else left?
It's just us three, man.
All right, man. Well, you guys
I
have a great week,
Kelly
and whoever's
in,
listening
guess,
out there. And
I guess because it was overtime, the Blog Talk Radio wouldn't let me call him.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's
well, everybody listening happened. Out there in cyberspace, thanks for listening, and make sure you join in on Friday.
There you go.
Right.
All right,
oh,
buddy.
By the way,
have a great week,
we'll
guys.
We'll be changing to Wednesday.
Cheers.
Awesome.
We might be on Wednesday, Bruce. How do you feel about being on Wednesday instead of Friday?
You know what? Wednesdays are even better because I think most people go out Friday nights and we'll have more listeners that way too.
And here's the other thing I'm going to say for you and Manasseh so you guys can spread the word. What we'll probably be doing is we'll be going Wednesdays with football and Fridays with football for an hour after lacrosse. We'll give Christopher a chance to get all, you know. So we'll go with football from 11 to 12. 10
is
to
that
11
going
to
be during the season too?
Yep.
Also, then we can like recap whatever Friday night.
Whatever,
games as well,
whatever,
sort of.
Whatever's going on Friday, Manasseh. Whatever's
that's
going on
idea.
Friday.
Yeah, that's a great
okay.
idea.
The only
time,
way,
right?
the only way yeah. it won't happen, and here's the problem with lacrosse last year, and it'll become the problem with that hour, is that if there's a football game on Friday, I got to try and do it from elsewhere. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You got me?
Yeah.
On the Friday games, just so you get it together. Listen, I love speaking to you guys. I can disagree to the hilt with you, Manasseh, but I still respect what you have to say, and I care about
same
what you
here,
have
Frank.
To say. Yeah, I hear you.
Same here. Same.
You know,
yeah,
because
absolutely.
If we're only saying what we think, then we're boring. I know there's some people who don't listen because it hurts them to hear this kind of debate, but you know what? Grow a pair. It's only a game.
This is great radio, man. People love banter. Like this is.
There
you
go. You
know.
Well, I hope you're right. We'll find out.
That's right. Well,
all
you
right.
guys have an Oski wee wee.
You too.
Night,
all
and we'll talk to you on Friday. All right.
Talk
cheers, boys. Bye bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Okay, so Manasseh Gebremadin and of course Bruce John Inch remained for the end of the program, which was extended. We extended ourselves. Oh my goodness, for almost an extra hour. Well. We hope if you have if you listened to this on the repeat, you heard the whole thing. We hope you enjoyed our little debate. And it would be really nice if you put the word out there that you can actually call and be a part of the program and the numbers out there for you to call. I enjoy this kind of banter. And as long as it doesn't get personal and or insulting, it's all good. Thank you, everybody. You've been listening to Candid Frank Live. And, of course, the number 175 CFL is the greatest football in the world. And I'd like to think that when it comes to discussing the CFL, this is the greatest show in the world, thanks to the guys that contribute. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Have a great Tuesday, which has already begun.